on a night that something I've never seen, Wayne Anderson being lapped at USA International Speedway, coming back and damn near stealing the show. How did this night come about?
Well, early in the race, battery was going dead, and it only run about half throttle. So I was trying to carry it as long as I could, and then Draughty lapped me. About five laps after I got lapped, there's a caution. That's, you know, go figure. So we come in and change the battery, but we didn't have enough time to change tires. So I went back out, and Lord knows it'd be another 40, 50 laps. We went, I think, 160 is when we come in and got tires. And then I had a rocket ship, but it was just too little, too late, you know. So I thought in my mind, I made up my lap, passed all, everybody got my lap back, and I checked out, and I was reeling in some of the back markers that were on the lead lap, and we got a caution. And it had five to go, and with five to go, I picked off what I could. So, one more lap, I think I'd have had some for him. But
well, in the last five laps, you jumped from, like, the top ten up right up onto Russell's bumper, huh?
Yeah, we got right there at the last lap, but I think he got a little worried about me there a couple laps from the end because he started missing the corner a little bit and everything, which I don't blame him. They're probably hollering on the radio, go, and he was doing all he could. And I mean, I'm proud of them. They did a good job, and I think my guys did a great job. So we just got up on the wheel there with about 40 to go and just made something out of nothing.
You know, this is talked about from time to time, but how tough is the heat here at Lakeland in the summer?
It was extremely hot for me tonight. I don't know why. I don't know if I was just, I mean, I was having to, trying to drive half throttle and the thing missing and you got cars around you. I just ended up just using parts of my body, muscles in my body that I didn't realize I had. But no, we just, you know, I don't give up behind that steering wheel. You know, I'm getting a little older. I mean, but I see these young kids falling out of the seat too, so I don't feel too bad.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Wade.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, we're here at the Lakeland USA International Speedway. Another one of the best races that we've seen here. Jeff Schofield, it looked for a minute there like you were going to turn a so-so run into a winning effort. Tell us about the closing laps of this race.
We just had a great race car. You know, we was out there just kind of riding around at the beginning, top five, stayed there and consistent. We made a few changes in the pits, and you know, the guys did an excellent job, got me back out there in the front. And as we came back out, you know, we saved our equipment a little bit. We rode about 20 laps, and I guess around 150, 160 or so, they started sliding around a little bit, and we took advantage of it. I mean, I think 10 laps when I got ready to go, we was in the lead, and there we was half straightaway ahead. You know, we hated to see the caution come out. That just it killed us. And I guess Roger's oil line come off, you know, right there on that last restart, and he came in, and it, you know, he leaked all his oil out, and unfortunately, we were the guinea pig, started on the pole there, and we got into his oil a little bit, and, you know, wasn't nothing we could do about it. And we just, unfortunately, you know, the next restart was the same way, but, you know, they all seen that, you know, half throttle instead of full throttle. So we had a definitely good race car. You know, it's a shame to see it happen, but, you know, hard to run against a series right now that ain't really supporting you too much. So we're going to be back. You know, we'll run it, but we're going to go run around a little bit and have some fun.
All right, man. Good to see you back out here, though, at Lakeland for sure.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it.
We're here at the conclusion of the Florida State Championship for 2007 with David Rogers. David, a lot of fans came out. We had a lot of cars, and boy, looked for a while there like it was going to be a David Rogers night.
Well, we had a lot of good cars too, you know, and we had a good car. We practiced good and had a good car all night, and you know, just couldn't finish the deal, you know. Of course, Justin had a better car than we did, but we probably had a second-place car, and then when he fell out, we had a definite shot at winning the race and just had something in the front of the motor, had an oil leak. Didn't blow the motor up, just had an oil leak, and it just happened at a very inopportune time.
Yeah, on that restart, where Schofield was ahead of you and spun out, you were right behind him?
Yeah, and see, I think that was my fault. I think, because at that time, I was calling my guys on the radio saying, I think the rear end's broke. The rear end's broke. I'm going to pull out of the way because I don't, you know, because I don't want to cause a big wreck. And they're like, well, you know, there's just four laps to go, you know, and I'm telling them on the radio, guys, it's something's, but it was evidently I was running in my own oil, and evidently I oiled the track down, and that's what Jeff got in.
And so that's what ended your night then?
Yeah, definitely. We just had an oil leak in the front of the motor, and, you know, they said there was a little bit of smoke. But with a dry sump motor, if it's like a seal or something, you dry the motor out so much that it probably wasn't a bad oil leak as long as we were racing. But when we rode around under caution, then you have a more of a normal oiling system, and that's probably when the oil leaked.
Yeah, well, you guys all definitely put on a great show, man. And, hey, thanks for being out here once again supporting racing here in Florida, David.
Yeah, I like to do it. You know, I love racing, and, you know, it's enjoyable, you know, to come out and run as good as we did. And, you know, it's disheartening to not finish, but one of these times, at least we did run up front this time.
All right, David, thank you.
The following is a presentation of Real Racin' USA.
Race fans! Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Daryl Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drotty, and more will be on hand for the 100-lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
It's come down to this. 100 laps, 5 to go. At the line, 5 cars nose to tail heading down into turn number 1. It's anybody's race.
Inside Florida Racing.
It's definitely crunch time. Somebody's going to have to make a move. 3 laps to go as they cross the start finish line. Going down into turn number 1, they start to fan out. Coming off a 2, they're side by side down the back straightaway.
Inside Florida Racing.
That's it. Coming off a turn 4, white flag in the air. Checkers and wreckers, anybody's race as they go down to turn number 1. They fan out 2 by 2, 3 wide coming off the turn number 2. They get sideways down the back straightaway. Someone breaks loose to the top, trying to make the run up on the high side. Going to do it the hard way around. Coming around 4, there's still 2 by 2. 3 cars drop back. It's 1 car coming out sideways. Who's on the inside? Coming to the line. It's anybody's race.
Inside Florida Racing.
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 And if you didn't understand it the first time, it's Inside Florida Racing. Good Monday evening to you. It's 7 o'clock straight up. Coming at you live from high atop the Karnak Studios. And Bonehead actually came in and added the extra 10 floors to the top, so we're a little bit higher tonight.
707, by the way.
707.
Yeah, those are some great interviews there at the beginning.
I tell you what, man, I heard it got a little crazy up there towards the end of the race.
Yeah. Jack, what a great interview that you did there with those three guys. Now,
I'm sorry, I'm not going to have much time to do this in the future because I have been nominated as the acting president of the Psycho Babblers Anonymous Association.
You just scared the you-know-what out of me. Then you came out of your shell, popped out of the closet. Get back in the closet. Jack, tell us about this race at Lakeland. I want to hear about it, man. Tell me about it. I know it's in print. I know if you read Karnak, you'd
there's
already
even pictures, man, and video.
Just what is
tell
that?
Me
is
how
that, is that the new wave of the future? Oh wait, that's
actually, I'll tell you what. It was real simple.
Who? Us?
Just tell me
how
my man
doing?
From Tampa got screwed Justin out of the race.
Justin Drotty was running away with the race big time. I mean, he had like a full straightaway lead he'd built up. And there was a lot of long runs because there wasn't a lot of early cautions. And he was, like, just stomping them, and nobody could keep up with him at all. And lap 152, he blew his motor.
Oh.
And
pull pin, so, cargo, boom.
So Timmy Russell, who had started on the pole, of course, he was pretty quick. And David Rogers had been running at times ahead of him in the very early going. So those guys had good cars. Wayne Anderson had battery problems all in the first half.
He went a lap down and made up a lap.
Yeah, he went a lap down. He actually got lapped eventually by Drotty, and then he got his lap back. Schofield hung back around fifth or sixth most of the day, and man, in the last five laps, it just went crazy. And Roger, looked like Rogers was going to win the thing, and then he blew his motor. Then it looked like Schofield was going to win the thing, and he spun out in the oil, apparently, that Rogers had put down. Timmy Russell started on the pole and ended up winning, but
the racing guys were smiling on him Saturday night.
Yeah.
But so you said that Schofield was pulling off the track. Had he just stayed on the track, would they let him keep his spot? What was going on there? You had some inside information in your ear.
I don't work for Fast Car, man.
Tell what were they saying? You were listening to what they were saying. Speak truth.
My understanding was is that they may have been going to like work something out there, but I don't know that for a fact. That's just what they were talking about.
They didn't want him to win.
No.
He didn't have any good things to say about the series there by listening to that interview.
I'll tell you what. There's far more exciting than Lakeland.
Huh?
There was actually something that happened to Florida driver Sean Murphy. This was the coolest thing. I don't know if you guys, you hear about what happened to Sean Murphy?
No. Huh?
Sean Murphy was leading the ASA race
at Bristol. Oh.
The Challenge Division 200 lap race at Bristol. And we had a bunch of Florida guys, Sean Bass, David Wilson, Jeff Choquette. All these guys were running, you know, in this race.
Yeah.
And Murphy had this thing covered. He had about an 8 to 10 car length lead. And he had been running away with the race in like the last 100 laps.
Bingo.
Come off of turn 4 on the final lap. Nobody near him. Hit the wall.
We need to get him on the phone.
The racing gods were not shining on him that night.
So there was a bonehead move. That had a lot of crazy things happen. So anyway.
That's unbelievable.
And I understand there were about 3,000 people there. Is that not correct?
Yeah, I don't know why. What was wrong with these people? They went and paid $30 to go to a friggin' race at Lakeland. I mean, what did they
do? You're not going to try to figure these track owners out, are you?
$30.
$30?
Now, Carol, he didn't introduce anybody.
Carol didn't get to see any racing or race car drivers or nothing. She had to sit down at the beach and go through a wedding. Was it a nice wedding, though?
It was beautiful. We have an awful lot of guests on tonight, so we probably should stop, you know what?
Jibber-jabbering.
And in the studio tonight, we have John and Camille Sapricone. Welcome to the show. Mike Powers, Peters will be calling in. David Rogers, Joe Harris, who you all asked for. Paul Ellis, known as Eagle Tie on the Internet. And Joy Gilden, who is a fan at Everywhere.
Mike Peters got something on his mind, too. And John is being so quiet.
That's scaring me to death.
He's got something. How you doing, John?
I think Jason's working on his best John voice right here. Go ahead.
What do you want me to do?
Man, that sounds good.
What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do?
What do you want me to do?
Get out of here. Get out of here.
Y'all talking like there was a godfather here or something.
Forget about it.
Nah, John's in the house. Let's hear you, John. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good. How you guys doing?
Great. I'm glad you could make it all the way up, the 8 stories and the little few extra.
I was a little winded after getting up so high here, I mean, in this area here.
You get a nosebleed if you go to the next story.
It's tough when
John, when you leave tonight, please don't back into my little tiny Dodge sitting across the street.
Okay, I'll just ride over the roof.
That big old Ford sitting in the
driveway.
His
truck is so big.
Yeah, well, he's definitely a promoter.
It's not mine, it's hers.
Definitely a
promoter. We usually put about 6 cars in the driveway, but you hogged up the whole daggone driveway. We're out on the street.
I'm the first one to be anywhere. Doesn't matter.
Nobody messes with the Godfather, I'll tell you that right now.
See that vehicle?
Wherever I have to.
Says DeSoto Speedway coming down. You know who it is.
Isn't it DeSoto Super Speedway?
Super Speedway.
Does anybody know why it was named a Super Speedway?
I bet there's a lot of people that would like to know.
Didn't Stymus do that?
No, I'm not going to tell you, but if anybody knows why, I want to win 2 tickets or something here.
Oh, okay.
Did Stymus originally do that?
No.
He's not going to tell you.
No, I will eventually, because everybody was like, you know, making fun of it and Super Speedway and international speedways and this and that. I just named it Super Speedway. There's a reason why I did it. But like I said, if anybody knows the real reason why I named it that,
2 tickets to DeSoto Super Speedway. If you know the real reason why John named it Speedway Super Speedway, 2 tickets.
I can tell you what we used to call it when we ran on it, and that was the Soup Bowl Speedway, because it was like driving in a soup bowl. Yeah, it is. It is a mini Bristol. It's a fast track. I love driving on that track.
Everybody does.
It's got 2 good grooves. You could go on the outside. I mean, it, it, the track is really, it's coming around. And, you know, everybody says, well, when are we going to pave it? When are we going to do this? I couldn't give you that answer when we're going to pave it. But, you know, I say, you know, we got two groove racing, you know, outside, inside, wherever you want to go. And it's really good.
You going to concrete it?
No.
I bet you if we put a post on the board and we ask them when you're going to pave it, somebody will know.
You think so?
I think so.
No.
I do.
I think you ought to.
There's some people on the message board that know the answer to anything and everything.
Do they have the lotto numbers? That's what I want.
The lotto numbers. All right.
That's the ultimate test. I want to see full track figure eights going there at your racetrack. We talked about it last time I came there, and it's one of the best figure eight drivers that I've known from the time Davis was there. And we were talking about it, and he'd go out there and run them if you ran them on the full track. But back in the day, it was only what? How long ago did they run on the full track?
8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah, they can do it again. I told them
the guys want to come down and want to race, and I haven't had any takers. So, you know, a lot of guys were telling me it's too fast. They don't want to go through the X, and it's, you know, well, that's, you know, I'm not going to make them do it.
Man,
if they want it, they can come.
Yeah. It was what? Who were the group of guys that had all the Mustangs for years up there? They had
A-team.
Some
Caulkins, the A-team. And then there was
they had an
Jimmy
A1
Cherry.
And an A2.
Jimmy Cherry had a bunch of cars that he used to bring. And those guys would put on a good show. They put the big 10-inch tires on the street stock cars, and they would go out there and really
Raced at Sunshine, and then we raced them last, and then they came down
over
the bridge and changed the tires or whatever they did, and then they came and raced at the Soto. So they raced twice in one night.
It was definitely a show. And those guys were good enough. You know, they didn't want to hit each other. And I remember that... watching many a time figure eight racing at that racetrack when one of my friends Red there used to race there.
Yeah, we used to make the long haul all the way up from Naples.
It's fast for racing figure eights. I gotta admit that it is fast.
Make you cringe as the
Man,
track
I'll
owner
tell you
a little
what.
Bit, huh?
Definitely. When you run something like that as a track owner, does that like make your heart skip a beat knowing that you're going to be doing something a little bit off the wall, a little bit something more crazy, you know, something that's a little bit more dangerous?
Not really. These guys, they know how to handle themselves. They know what they're doing when they're going through that X. They know how to, you know, time it. It looks a lot more dangerous from the stands than I think actually driving the car. But, you know, they're timing themselves. Yeah, and there are some times when you have mishaps and this and that. But most of the time, they got it pretty well down.
Do you have to – I guess what I'm getting at is because – I look at other tracks and everything whenever they're doing the special shows, their figure eight bus races, their bus racing. You have the issue with the bus racing that we had earlier this season up in Orlando. It was a terrible tragedy. But how, as a track owner, I mean, you know, because things are going to happen in racing and they happen really fast and we have to prepare ourselves for those. But how do you as an owner, I mean, mentally prepare for that? Because I've seen things go wrong and it's almost heart-stopping to me because of what it would weigh on, you know, because you got the situation where you could go through losing a track or something like that because of that happening.
Believe me, like what I'm saying is, you know, no track owner wants to see a tragedy like that. I don't want to see anybody hurt. You think about it. I mean, you could walk off your front stoop and drop dead, or you could fall off that stoop and break your leg or hit your head. You know, there's so many stupid things that can happen. You know, and like I say, you know, like when you're in that race car, you're in a controlled environment. You have a roll cage around. You have a fuel cell. It's not like being on I-75 when a guy comes across the medium, hits you head on. You know, we got some EMTs there. We got fire rescue there. It all helps and it all works out. You know, in the end, and of course, we don't want to see anybody hurt.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I mean, I got, you know, if a racer goes off our racetrack, pulls into the infield, I'll have an official run over there to him. If he's going to go back on the racetrack, I had it Saturday night, check his seatbelts. Please make sure his helmet's on before you let him go out. Somebody would run over to the car and look. I actually go in the car and physically pull the belts with my hands.
You know, I wanted to say something there is that, Jason bringing it up, as a driver, you have to mentally prepare yourself. You can't lay it on the track owner because the track's laid there. And we've talked about it before, is that in race car
accidents, I was just kind of,
if you put yourself on the line and you're going to go race a car, if you have a crash and you survive, you should be happy. Because back in the day, those guys had those same crashes that you had to have that same enjoyment, and they died. when they had those crashes.
You're absolutely right.
You know, the tracks haven't changed.
Well,
the
I was trying to get
flat and
I was trying to get to the whole stress
circle.
Issue because John's got a lot of gray hair.
Well, and there was and some of those gray hairs get caused by track owners to some of the stuff like the posts that were put on the Florida Stock Car Racing message board earlier this week. John was having some fun with people, and I don't think people really understood that you were just having a little fun.
Well, you know, like I said, I mean, they throw it out at you, and as you know, I would talk for any track owner out there as they would talk for me, and you know what? We want to have fun too, but you know what? When you guys throw stuff at us, we got the right to throw it back right at you.
Yeah, I agree.
Come on.
I agree, and that's a good thing. You guys are always willing to sit here and take phone calls. People want to call today? Are they allowed to call?
So if they can dish it out, he can sure as hell take it. So.
And how do they do that?
What's the phone number?
They need to give us a call. If you want to get hold of us here in the car in the Inside Florida Racing Studios and you want to talk to Mr. Sapricone live, just write these numbers down, 941-423-7104 or 941-228-8300. 5-9. Once again, 941-423-7104 or 941-228-8359. Those are the numbers.
Or you can post questions on the Karnak message board, and I'll be keeping an eye on it, and we'll try to answer all your questions.
I'll hand John my laptop over here so he can fire right back at him.
Okay, now let's get down to the nitty-gritty of the whole deal.
Here we go.
Okay. Let's talk.
Hey.
We were talking before.
The bonehead is speaking.
We were talking before about the races and from late model to modified, all that.
Don't tell me we're going to talk about this.
I saw a pitiful showing of modifieds show up over the weekend over here at Charlotte County Speedway, I'll say. They didn't have but a few of them there. I think the modifieds today themselves have their own kind of details that they've got to work out. You know, the guys that own the cars as to what motor's going to go on and whatever.
Claimer.
What do you think about what can we do? And I don't really want to get into the thing of you and Bobby working stuff out, stuff like that. You guys are going to get that stuff worked out, hopefully. That would be nice. But let's talk about the modified class in itself. You're a very advocate modified person. So
Claimer.
I think it's going to go there anymore.
What I'm going to do in November I spoke to Don about it, and, you know, we're trying to figure out what we're going to do with the modifieds, and what I would like to do is have a 10-race series at my racetrack. I am going to invite every modified driver down in Florida to come down and to sign up to have a meeting, and whoever shows up, I'll give them a free entry into the first icebreaker modified race. So you need to be there, and you need to speak your mind, but then you got to understand that, you know, us as promoters and track owners, we have to put all this stuff together and digest it, and the bottom line is we have to make a profit from this. If we don't, we cannot survive, and that's the main, you know, thing of this whole modified thing. I think we got some great modifieds on the West Coast. You got mostly the big stuff on the East Coast and North Florida, but I know there's over 40 or 50 small motor modifieds out there. I ran a race the other, a 75-lap race. I told the guys to put 75 pounds on the car. I think it worked really good. If the 8 car didn't start up on the front row, we inverted the whole field. It was only 12 cars. It was 2,000 to win 75 lapper, and I turned around and told
Hang on.
All right,
go ahead, John.
I turned around and I told Jesse, Jefferson and Johnny Jr. If you guys start in the back, I'll give you $500. Let's put a show on. And Jefferson said to me, I'd like to go. If you can get Johnny to go to the back, we'll go. And they put on one heck of a show. The big car started up on the front row, and it took Jefferson a while to get around him. He finally got around him, and Johnny got around the 9 car or whatever it was there, the big motor. And then what happened was Jefferson won with 2 laps to go. He had to go into pits in the beginning of the race because he got a flat right on the initial warm-up lap, so he had to go in the pits, come back. He was starting last anyhow, so he didn't really care, but he had a tire that was 75 laps old on the car, and he was struggling with that car the whole night. 2 more laps, Johnny would have had him, but it was a great race between both of them to get to the front.
So did the 75 pounds make a difference?
Yes, it did. It helped him. And what's going to happen with I think we can go 75 or 100 pounds on him, and as soon as they keep losing that fuel and they keep losing that weight, they're gonna loosen up. In a longer race, it's going to be the little car that I think will overtake the big motor.
Excuse me, I don't mean to cut in, but we have Mike Peters on the phone right now.
Go ahead, Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
You there,
hey,
Mike?
Hey, guys, how are you? You're a little difficult to hear. Can you speak up at all?
That's just a microphone check.
Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, John, how
are
you?
Hey, Mike, how you doing, Mike? It's John.
Good, guys.
John has a mic, but he doesn't have a headset, so we got to all speak louder.
Okay.
Hey, how'd you do Friday night?
More of the same.
Well, what?
And that would be?
More of the same from the week before that I was lying about to everybody, I guess.
Well, you know how that goes.
It's a bad time of the year too, and you know I take that with stride, and everybody needs to understand that. But you know, late models were off a little bit. We had 10, and that's to be expected with the big race that was going on
right.
Saturday night at Lakeland.
Yeah, I had I had about 800-900 people in the stands Saturday night, but I think I had six or seven cars, you know, six or seven classes, and which was good about it was an easy night. We had two classes that ran for trophies, and the payout was, you know, was moderate. So, you know, I made a couple of bucks, but it was okay.
Right.
Track owner talk. Folks, Mike Peters owns the Ocala Speedway, and we've got John Sapricone here, the owner of DeSoto Speedway, and
are you guys friendly neighbors?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's nice.
I met Mike at the meeting we had a couple of weeks ago. Again, I really haven't sat down and talked with him. He's a very knowledgeable guy. He's good for racing. We just got to, you know, try to work everything out we can together with all of us.
Like, here's a question that came in from people outside. Carol's going to give you what the question is.
We have a two-part question from Joe. First, what is the reasoning for running six or seven classes a night, many with 10 cars or so that look the same as cars in other classes, such as Pure Stock, Hobby Stock, Street Stock, and all that? Secondly, how do you feel the overall car count would be affected if you ran just four regular classes a week, late models, modified, sportsman, street stock?
Well, here's my analogy on that. Would you rather pay $15 and see seven classes? I think a lot of racing. I think it's a lot of fun. Yes, we do need two and three in different classes out there, and you got some guys that run bombers because they can't afford to buy tires every week. You got guys that run pure stocks. I would like to see 25 cars in each class. Are we going to see that? I doubt it.
Things may pick up. You know, racing is constantly growing, and people are constantly building cars, and I think that it's good that you have these regular classes. You know, you need to.
What do you think? What's your take on it, Mike?
My take is there needs to be less divisions. I've kind of inherited that at Ocala Speedway from running seven and eight divisions there in the past, and I'm at a point now where I'm looking at making some decisions for next year and cutting it back and trying to bring more exciting racing per individual race rather than the total number of actual races per night, but maybe less divisions and maybe more cars in each division. You know, if you got one division that's struggling with 8 to 10 cars and these guys really want to race and that division's not there anymore, they're going to get a car in one of the other divisions and they're going to race. I asked the whole entire list, answered a list of questions here that Eagle Tie actually posted on the internet probably 3 or 4 days ago. I don't know how he or who he is, but I mean that's one of my answers to one of the questions that he posted on there as well. Any changes with purse, admission fees, changes in future? I got a whole list of stuff here that I went ahead and answered for him ahead of time, being that we're on the radio show venue, and I know it absorbs a lot of time.
Well, Paul Ellis, who does go by the name of Eagle Tie, will be one of our guests tonight. We have another question here for the track owners from Not Amused. To what degree should tracks in Florida cooperate with each other? Should they simply try to schedule around each other, or should they all attempt to have the same rules for various racing divisions? Should they all come together and operate under the same umbrella as the fast car tracks have done? Oh, my gosh, these are a lot of questions. We'll take them one at a time. Or maybe should we just say the heck with it and everyone do as they please with no regard for each other? I'm just curious.
I don't think we should say the heck with it by any means. No. I think it makes sense for certain divisions to be on the same set of rules, like you guys were talking about the modifieds earlier. I'd like to see the entire state be on the same set of modified rules. I think we'd do much better
You're 100% right. I would agree with that, too.
Car count-wise. You know, you're never going to have a perfect world out there. I mean, you know, Charlotte County's 3-4 hours from Ocala. Doesn't make sense for him sometimes to not have a late model race when I'm having a late model race. Or, you know, the situation with Lakeland this weekend. We had 10 late models at Ocala. These are guys that are not going to go race at Lakeland. You know, so, I mean, you can – I think we've made a lot of progress over this last year, and I think you guys can look forward to some bigger and better stuff for next year.
Well, it's if everybody can get on the same page and you know, it's like I really don't – you know, Mike doesn't bother me up there and Citrus doesn't bother me up there, but I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to work my – you know, crazy about with Bobby Deal so that I can help him – you know, make this work between the two of us because we're only an hour and 15 minutes apart. Yeah, and I don't want to see him go out, and he doesn't want to see me go under. But, you know, the thing what we need to do is you know, to try to make this thing work together. And I think, you know, with that last meeting we had, you know, it's going to take a little bit more time. A lot of people are on the honeymoon right now. After that honeymoon gets over and they smoke clears, you're going to see, I think, a better change.
Let's hold that thought for a second. We'll come back to the whole thing about tracks working together and everything here in just a minute. We're going to take a break real quick. Jot these numbers down if you have any questions for our track owners tonight. Area code 941-423-7104 or 228-8359.
And Mike,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to tell Mike, make sure Mike, just hang with us on the line. We're going to be right back in a couple of minutes. Just hang on the line, and we're going to get one of these other guys that come on the message board and talk all this stuff on, and let's see how, you know, ask the questions directly.
Sure.
There we go. Go ahead, press the button. This is Inside Florida Racing.
On a night that something I've never seen, Wayne Anderson being lapped at USA International Speedway, coming back and damn near stealing the show. How did this night come about?
Well, early in the race, battery was going dead, and it only run about half throttle. So I was trying to carry it as long as I could, and then Draughty lapped me. About five laps after I got lapped, there's a caution. That's, you know, go figure. So we come in and change the battery, but we didn't have enough time to change tires. So I went back out, and Lord knows it'd be another 40, 50 laps. We went, I think, 160 is when we come in and got tires. And then I had a rocket ship, but it was just too little, too late. You know, which I thought in my mind, I made up my lap, passed all everybody, got my lap back, and I checked out. And I was reeling in some of the back markers that were on the lead lap, and we got a caution. And it had five to go, and with five to go, I picked off what I could. So, One more lap, I think I'd have had some for him. But
well, in the last five laps, you jumped from, like, the top 10 up right up onto Russell's bumper, huh?
Yeah, we got right there at the last lap. But I think he got a little worried about me there a couple laps from the end because he started missing the corner a little bit and everything, which I don't blame him. They're probably hollering out on the radio, go, and he was doing all he could. And I mean, I'm proud of them. They did a good job, and I think my guys did a great job. So we just got up on the wheel there with about 40 to go and just made something out of nothing.
You know, this is talked about from time to time, but how tough is the heat here at Lakeland in the summer?
It was extremely hot for me tonight. I don't know why. I don't know if I was just, I mean, I was having to, trying to drive half throttle and the thing missing and you got cars around you. I just ended up just using parts of my body, muscles in my body that I didn't realize I had. But no, we just, you know, I don't give up behind that steering wheel. You know, I'm getting a little older, I mean, but I see these young kids falling out of the seat, too, so I don't feel too bad.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Wade.
Thanks, buddy.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
Race fans, Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Daryl Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drani, and more will be on hand for the 100 lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and
Construction.
Welcome back
to Inside Florida Racing.
813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction race team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
Good Monday evening to you. Welcome back to Inside Florida Racing. I am racing Jason Beckner, along with the very beautiful Miss Carol Wicks. Oh, come on, lady. Jack
McCarnett, and the very beautiful Rob Elting.
Rob Elting. Yeah. See, you can say beautiful. And the very stressed out, gray-haired man of the hour, Mr. John Saperco.
Hey, Carol, we have two gray-haired men of the hour.
Carol, on the line with us, we have Mike Peters, and we also have Paul Ellis, who posts on the Florida Message Board from time to time.
So Mike, you still there?
Yeah, guys.
All right.
Mike, I'd like you to meet Paul.
Well, Paul and I met while you guys were off on a commercial break.
Okay.
After on break, we were talking.
Did y'all get everything worked out?
Me out.
Thank you for coming on the show, Paul.
I missed it, too. That would have been.
That's okay, because I got free tickets for next year. So.
Oh no way!
So all you got to do is go on the board and insult them, and they give you free tickets. I like that. I'm going to do that
for a year. Is that what he said? For a year?
No, next year.
For next year. Oh,
Mike, you got some competition. John just said he was going to give him free tickets for 2 years.
Just kidding.
I'm not even going to give him a ticket. I just want him to come.
The biggest thing in Florida short track racing right now is the whole situation. I think really the message boards and the internet bring out the worst and everything that goes on, and because that's where all the rumors start flying.
Can I say one thing about message boards first? Can I just say one thing?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. When I go to the promoters workshop, I try to go to Reno, and 2 years ago when I was there and everybody in the room, there's like 900 promoter track owners there. And I forget who was making this comment, but someone stood up on stage and they said, how many people look at the internet here? How many people hate the internet here and hate the message boards? And everyone in that room stood up and was clapping and raising their hands. And it was like, I thought they were going to turn the place upside down.
Okay, I have something I'd like to say about that, and it's only my opinion. It is not the opinion of Inside Florida Racing. The message board were put on there as an open forum, and I believe that anybody that wants to write on that board, as long as they're not vulgar.
If you tell the truth, though.
Or character assassination. Lying about somebody is a sort of character assassination, so that's included. But otherwise, they should be able to say pretty much anything they want.
Well, there should be no nicknames. There should only be the person's name.
It doesn't make any difference. It's an open forum.
Then you know who it is.
And they should be able to say what they want
as long as it's within the rules. Put your real name out there and let us know what you're saying so we can face
okay,
you.
Okay, if I put my real name on there and I say something that really ticks you off, you're going to say, don't you come to my track anymore.
So I'm
damn sure not going to put my name on.
He's not that kind of person.
I'm not saying he is. I'm saying what people say.
As long as you'll say that to my face, I could care less. But you know what I don't like?
He won't let people come back to his track.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Of course not. Would your mother let you play with somebody that slaps you in the face back and forth?
Only if I went back and kicked their ass.
you know. But, come on.
You can't say kicked on the air.
Mike, how do you feel about the internet, the message boards?
I feel like it's a necessity, and it should be used as an open forum. I'll be perfectly honest with you. When people go on there and ask questions to track owners or promoters, maybe some of the reasons they don't respond is because the perfect example of what happened to me in the last week. I've gone on that message board and been nothing but open and honest with people and trying to build my reputation in the state, and it turns into a bloodbath in a matter of a couple hours.
I don't think you can give an answer.
And I talked to the guy who called Mike a liar, and I'm not going to embarrass him by doing this over the air, but I talked to him for almost an hour the other day, and he was not, had never talked to Mike before, didn't know Mike personally.
How do you call him a liar?
And did not want to come on this show and talk to him to us about it. At least, Paul, at least you're here, so that's cool.
John, you like the internet.
And that's great, gang. And since Rob, the guy that called me a liar, didn't want to be on the air today, maybe Paul's got a calculator at his house. I'll go ahead and share some basic numbers from him from the night in question, which was July 27th. When he's all done, he can give us the bottom figure that he comes up with. I don't have anything to hide in that respect.
As you know, I'm not an employee of the Ocala Track, nor do I intend on being one. So, Mike, I would decline that offer.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, okay, Paul.
I would just say this. The people that go on that message board and bash the track owners or promoters, those people hide behind different screen names for whatever reason. The reason why I go on that message board is something needs to be done, and voices need to be heard. Now, as a track owner and a promoter, if you are running your program that night, the last thing you want is a spectator or someone from the stand to stop you and to complain about something. They're not going to get your attention. It's going to go right over your head because you're worried about the race program. Very many people forget what happened, so they're not going to call you on Monday or Tuesday. So I think the forum, if it's voiced in the right way, it's a good tool. Now, it's what you make it, and it's what you take of it. Now, I would like to ask John this. After I posted a couple serious messages, I basically said, okay, educate me. You know, I'm uninformed. I'm not a promoter, and I'm not a track owner. I listed five or six questions. And then all of a sudden, the message board went quiet from John.
Why did it go quiet?
I don't know why.
I was waiting to come.
I'm sorry, John. I mean to step on your toes. I did answer all your questions, and when John's done talking, I'll answer all your questions for you.
Great, Mike.
Well, while John's getting ready to respond to you, I have a question right off the bat. Why, when you went on the board on August the 1st and you started this thread about Triple Crown Series, what was the point of saying that, you know, I mean, I understand you, anybody can complain about the price of a show. I understand that. But what good does it do to, say, boycott all their stinking shows and, like, by the way, thanks for throwing a bone to military members attending, sir. Were you being funny? Because sometimes these things come across, people's humor doesn't come across. Were you being funny?
No, I wasn't being funny. I was being quite serious because here's my take on the Sunbelt show, on that late model show at Lakeland. Okay? If they're going to time trial in the afternoon, okay, and you expect me to show up there at 7 p.m. and just to watch racing, the actual features, the two features, based on the first race, when I went there the first time, it was follow the leader. It was pretty boring. Pretty much it took them a long time to get up to lap 50. And then after that, you know, it was basically follow the leader. And if it wasn't for school.
You ever been to a football game that was 10-3?
Have you ever watched a NASCAR race?
Thank you. I mean, you can't. The promoter can't predict.
No, I'm going to run out on the racetrack. I'm going to rearrange the cars and do this and do that so we can have a better show.
People that time trial their cars.
Well, the thing is, these owners and promoters can't help it when drivers run out of talent and you have 30 cautions before lap 50.
Again, my point is, if you want to have a rapport with the track owners and try to, if you want to have a positive influence, what in the name of God help does it do to come on the message board and say boycott all their stinking shows and make a sarcastic remark about the military, about them giving tickets to the military. I don't understand that attitude at all. How can you have that attitude and at the same time say that you're trying to help the promoters?
Well, first of all, I never said I was helping the promoters, okay? Second of all, being a former military member myself, I was basically telling the track promoters, thank you for throwing the bone to the military members, because it's never nowadays. Years ago, it used to be a discount for military members or, you know, a free admission for an active duty military.
Well, how do you know we don't do this? I invite the Coast Guard down there all the time, and I give them a special price.
How many military people are within the Lakeland area?
What about the Marines?
I do this all the time. I just had the Coast Guard come down to me, and I told everybody to come in, get $5 off. Come on down. I tell them all the time. I says, you guys want to buy 300 tickets and pay for the tickets? If every one of those people show up, I'll write a check back to you. How's that? That's not good enough?
It sounds to me like he's a little confused here, or we're a little confused, because he's talking Lakeland and yet. And
well, he's saying that the track owners don't do anything for anybody. You don't know what we do for people. You're not there 9 to 5, 7 days, 6 days, 5 days a week, come down there race night.
And unless they have a uniform on, you don't even know who they are.
How many passes did I give out at that Sunshine Thing?
I gave at least 100. I know you had about 300.
That's why I was going to say, you like the internet.
I love it.
Because
it's great. If
you're
talking, you're
a great promoter.
If there's a bad thing to say about me or a good thing to say about me, they're talking about me. That's what my grandfather taught me.
You got it. That's right. And you got to know that. That's why, good or bad.
Don't forget now, we have Mike Peters on the phone also.
Well, Mike, you agree with that, don't you? No, Mike wants to get on Eagle Man here, Ellis.
He wants to talk to him.
He wants to jump him pretty good. Go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I don't have anything to jump him about. I mean, I think that question was directly pointed at John there. I went ahead and answered all 5 or 6 of his questions that he posted on Karnak, and, you know, if we've got a minute or two, I'll just run through them real quick, and I gave pretty short and simple answers.
Go ahead, run through them.
Do that.
All right, number one, what kind of marketing do you do? We do radio advertising. We do email blast newsletters. We do the Karnak ad. Every single week, which I see Karnak people mention on Karnak almost weekly,
Mike,
as though the track owners don't do this.
Mike, can
every
I ask?
Every single week at Ocala Speedway, I give out 150 to 200 tickets.
Thank
every
you.
Every week. Every week, Monday through Friday, someone drives around in the pace car and hands out 150 to 200 tickets every single week.
So my wife does the same thing. She gives out a ton of passes. Can I? And I'll say this, can I ask you, and I don't want to pry into your business, how much money do you spend, cash outlay, a year, and what's your budget for advertising?
Well,
mine's $120,000.
What's that?
My budget for advertising, what I spend.
Are you there?
Yeah.
He said he spends $120,000 in advertising a year.
Yeah, no, ours is less than that, but you got to understand, I haven't been at this business the last 7 to 10 years. This is my second year. I'll tell you, I spent $60,000 on radio advertising last year alone for
39
events. That comes out to an average of $1,500 a week in radio advertising, which is the most expensive form of getting butts in the seats. What I've found is going out and shaking the community, my local community in Marion County, shaking the trees, hanging up posters, giving out free tickets in different areas and different markets, people that necessarily wouldn't have been at the Speedway. Obviously, we don't try and hand out tickets to the same people every week. We want to attract new fans and new faces. My fan attendance from when I bought the Speedway has doubled, okay? My average year-over-year fan attendance for last year doubled from the previous year when I bought the track. And we have a long ways to go. The next question he put on the Internet was, what is the status of your track right now? Status of Ocala Speedway is it's on the rebound, okay? It's going on its second year under new ownership. There were a lot of hurdles to overcome. There was a lot of tarnished and damaged relationships in the community from the previous owners, with the drivers and also with the fans. It's a multifaceted business, okay? And number one, I wanted to focus on the basic operation. I don't think a lot of people realize out there, Mike Peters cleaned the restrooms at Ocala Speedway for the first year because I wanted to make sure my fans had a good facility to come to on Friday night. Somebody else helps me out with it now, but for the first year I did that, okay? All the way down to that level that I don't think a lot of folks out in the racing community see that go on a day-to-day basis.
None of them
do.
Track.
We just sit around all week and count our dollars, and that's just simply not the case.
The people that are on the message boards are the ones that are sitting around in front of their computers while the track owners are out there mowing grass and cleaning and paying bills and trying to arrange a racing schedule. That I know for a fact.
Was this
number three question? How is your car count at the track? My car count at Cal Speedway has been hit and miss. One night we may have 70 cars, and next night we might have 100 cars. I've had a lot of hurdles to overcome there. We got tech issues. We had tech issues before I bought the track. Basically, cars weren't being tech, you know. And I have a multi-stage sort of progression schedule I'm following as far as teching stuff. This year, we started confiscating illegal parts. If we thought it was a part that we needed to keep, we definitely didn't want to see it end up on another car. Next year, I'm looking at advancing it to the next level of a driver having to show that his car has actually been corrected before he takes it back out on the track. I think it's imperative to have a good tech department and a well-run tech area and to make sure that the cars are following the rules.
Amen.
Thank you.
Amen.
That's why you have to move people around. That's why you have to train new people. You have to bring, you know, you have to move people around. And I go through that all the time, and I get criticized all the time. Oh, you should have never fired him. Why? Because he's not letting you run in between the buoys. You tell the guys you want him to run. This is what I want done, and this is how I expect it to have done. Whether
well,
you work.
And, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, I literally have drivers tell me I'm never coming back to this place.
Till next Saturday.
They get disqualified because they were running an illegal part on their car. That's not my fault.
Right, you're 100% right. We try. My biggest goal is if something's wrong and you really know it's wrong, please come and tell tech. We'll give you a week or two to fix it. But I'm not going to let you go through tech. You're supposed to be 2,900 pounds. You come through 2,800 pounds. No, that ain't going to work. Same with left side weight. You're supposed to be 56. You come 58. No, I don't think so. We cannot do that. I can't fix that next week. I got to DQ you. And that's the way it has to go. You know these scales are here for you, and we're here to help you get your cars right. That's what the proper tech man should be doing at every one of these racetracks.
I agree.
Number four, what are we willing to attract more fans? Plain and simple, just about anything, okay? One of the key things that I want to focus on up here in my neck of the woods is more community involvement. Before I purchased the track for the 3 years previously, the growth in Marion County was 42% annually. Since I've had the track, it's been 21% annually, so it's gone down significantly. But the owners that had the place the 3 years before me really didn't spend a lot of money on advertising, marketing, and getting out in the community and you know, focusing on that area of the business. And because of that, I get a lot of phone calls, and I got a lot of guests that show up week in and week out to say they've never been here before and never knew the place was here. Now, Ocala Speedway is the oldest racetrack in the state now, and probably 50% of the population in Marion County don't even know it's there.
I got the same – I ditto that, Mike. I got the same problem. People come out to the racetrack. I didn't know this racetrack was here. I said, right. You know, you don't read the paper. You don't listen to the, you know, to the radio. I mean, I ride around with my van, the ghetto van. It's all leaded up and everything. I mean – you know, I don't know how much more I could do.
That is a damn ghetto van. There's no doubt about
no,
it.
No, not that one. My van. My personal van. My baby.
Astro.
Exactly. But I can't, you know, don't think that us track owners and promoters just want to have 1,000 people a week. I want to have 3,000 people a week. Believe me, I'm not turning them away and throwing them out the door. But there's certain things that you have to do, and you have to have some consistency. And you got to, you know, this is just the way it is today.
Yeah. Well, I agree with giving away some tickets because every ticket that you give away turns out to be somebody that buys food, buys a beer, buys something, and then tells
right.
their friends about what a good
hope
time
we get
that
them
they
back.
Have.
Mike,
right. Hope we get them back.
They only get in free once.
Okay, hang on. Mike, you're still there?
Yeah, Paul. I average about a 25% return on my free tickets.
Paul, that's cool. Okay, Paul, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm listening to all of Mike's answers.
And okay. What are you thinking about the answers?
No, I think they're very good. I think the main reason why I wrote those questions was to hear exactly that, because I think the main problem is there's a lot of people that are not informed, including myself, okay, that would like to hear from the track owners and the promoters.
Why don't
it's
you
hard to be a track owner and a promoter at the same time? Kind of a double-edged sword, because it's a very big give and take. I understand that. But I would love to hear from the track owners to say, this is where we're at, this is where we're going. And it's hard if I only show up on Saturday night and that track owner is more worried about putting the show on, which he should be, than
answering questions.
Well, so, if you come down to my racetrack and see me and come in and introduce yourself to me and want to talk to me, if you come down to my racetrack, come introduce yourself to me on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, I'll gladly sit down and talk to you. I don't have a problem. Saturday night, I do have a problem because if I have to close the door down, it costs me $7,000-$8,000. It goes out the window. If I got rain in the area, I'm rushing the show. Yeah, I got to get it done because you know what? I'm not coming out of my pocket to lose $7,000 or $8,000 and have to go to the bank to take money out.
That's the main reason why I wrote those questions, and that's the main reason why I told Carol I'd love to come onto the show because I think those questions a lot of people would like have the answers to, but the problem is, one, is they're racers and they don't want to approach you based on maybe something might happen in the future, or you're too busy on a Saturday night.
Okay,
well,
we are too busy.
Well, I am too busy.
I've got a suggestion.
That's all. There's no reason to get hostile.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing.
Where am I on a
check this out. Check
hold
this
on,
out.
Hold
hang
on
a second.
One
hang
at
on
time.
A second. Now, here's just something that I got out of this, okay, Paul? Now, I really think as a race fan, I would love to be informed maybe on a monthly basis of what direction my local track is going in. What is going on with the track? What is the status? What does the future look like? How are things
looking?
Buy a
ticket and come to the races. That's what I'm telling you.
Okay, well, here's the...
Like I always write down, the fans have a lot of venues to go spend their money. And it's ultimately up to the track owner or the promoter to be savvy to get those people in the stands.
Absolutely.
And once you get them there, those race car drivers are going to keep them there. And it starts with the announcer. And it starts with the race director keeping the program going, keeping the fans entertained. Because if you got a caution for 15 laps and they're watching four cars run around the track.
Well, here's... Okay. You think nobody knows this? Like, you're telling us something new? I mean, I've been listening to this nonsense for 10 years. I started Karnak on this whole premise.
I don't like it.
Well, what's, but wait a minute. What?
Answering Paul's questions.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Peters.
Go ahead, Mike.
Number five is changes in the future, okay? I'm looking at going back to Saturday nights at Ocala Speedway. A couple of reasons why. Number one, the reason I went to Friday night in the first place was because I wanted to give us an opportunity to stand out on our own. And if drivers wanted to come race with us, they had the opportunity and still had the opportunity to go to their local track on Saturday night. I wanted everybody in the state to see that we were going to do what we said we were going to do. Two other issues. I think we'll have more drivers come and join us if we race on a Saturday night. In fact, I've been told that by a dozen or so. And number two, it's a real struggle for some of my employees to get there on Friday evenings when they have to work at their normal jobs on Friday, sometimes till 7 or 8 o'clock. And that's really no fault of their own. As far as the future, less divisions. One of the big things that I would love to see, one of the best races I had at Ocala Speedway this year was the Southern Sportsman Series. Why? Because of the side-by-side restarts. The fans ate it up. They loved it. And if the drivers were there to put on a show, there shouldn't be any problem with side-by-side restarts in every division. That's what I
Absolutely.
Want to see happen at Ocala Speedway
Absolutely.
Next year.
Okay, and now we're going on
Number
to...
Number six, any changes with purse admission pit fees? Purse, no, but I would like to add that I think all the tracks in the state should offer the same purses in every division. That way, John's not a bad guy 1 week because he paid $3,000 to win and $5,000 to start, and then Mike's not a bad guy the next week because this race was this and this race was that. I think every whether it's a 100-lap late model race, it should pay this. If it's a 100-lap modified race, it should pay this.
Well, let's
that's
bring
something the track owners should all get together.
Let's bring that up at the next meeting, and let's try to put an average together because they say I don't pay anything for this one, I don't pay nothing for that one. But if I put my pay up on the board, you guys would be throwing me off the message board there. And I think we need to adjust it and make it so that everybody's getting the same pay and be done with it.
Okay, Mike, admission and pit fees.
Admission and pit fees. Admission, I don't think I can go any lower than we're at right now. We're at $12 general admission for adults, $8 for seniors, $6 for students. I have a family.
Wow.
Pack, two adults, two children, $25.
That's beautiful.
That's not going to change.
That's
pit
beautiful.
Fees, $25. That for the foreseeable future is not going to change at this point in time either. As far as the purse situation, I just want to add a little bit to that as well. I think the state overall can do its best to work together, whether it's with Fast Car and John or Bobby or Mike, Auburndale, Emirates, whoever. I think we can all do the best that we can to work together, but you're still going to have schedules and races that are scheduled on top of each other.
Yes.
And fans are just going to have to decide if they're going to go here and watch this big race or there and watch that big race. I think it's more important for the neighboring tracks to try and work together
you know, Inverness and I got on the same rules this year, and overall it's worked out very well. I think a lot of people were the impression that we were trying to get a lot of Inverness cars to come over to Ocala, a lot of Ocala cars to come over to Inverness. That was only one very small part of the equation. One of the biggest ones for me is when I built the car and I raced at Ocala Speedway, it didn't make any sense to me why I should build a car just to be able to race at one track. You know, if my division's off this weekend and Inverness is having a race, why can't I go over to Inverness and race it?
Amen.
It didn't make any sense to me. And that's one of the things that I think in the long run will help bring down the cost to individual drivers, okay? He's not keeping a stockroom full of parts in his garage because I got to put this on it to go over here, and then I got to take it off to go over there, and I got to add this. To me, that doesn't make sense.
One more. You got one more there to go. What are the benefits of the detractors week in and week out there, Mike?
I'm going to start off with the negative and end on the positive. The detractors, week in and week out, the freaking bashing, okay? The bashing for... you sent me to the rear because the flagman, in the reality of it, you didn't even realize that the flagman didn't even make that call. The director made that call. The flagman didn't see it. He was looking at the top five cars because it was the last lap, and you were in 12th, and the race director happened to notice that, you know. We do our absolute best. I'm committed to it, that my staff does the best job they can to make the best calls that they can.
Amen.
Same thing in the tech area. Guy shows up. Guy knows what the rules are from the beginning of the year, but he goes and builds a car that's not according to the rules, and then when he goes for tech and gets disqualified, it's a track's problem. And the track gets bashed for it. That's the biggest detractors. The benefits, even over dollars or anything else,
Go ahead, Rob.
For me is I get an absolute charge out of putting on a good show for the fans and being complimented on a well-called race. Okay.
I think all the track owners try to do the best they can to put on a good show.
Absolutely.
Why would they not?
It's stupid not to.
It's not in our hands. We give you the facility. We give you the tools to work with, okay? And that's what I want to stress. It's those drivers. When I get those drivers and they're listening to on-M scanners and they're listening to race control and we're moving and we're doing this, we're doing that, they're listening to us. They're the guys that are putting on the show. They're doing a great job. And you got to compliment these guys when they do that. I mean, you should have seen my Bomber show this week. It was awesome.
How many showed up?
17.
Wow, it's getting better again.
It was great.
All right. Well, real quick, Paul, are you?
Be addressed and talked about. I think as far as racing in the state, I think you know NASCAR is up above all of us. I'd really like to see NASCAR start some kind of grassroots campaign, maybe even assign drivers to local tracks to help them to stop by and show their face. It'll even help out with their sponsors. You know who is doing that? You know who's been to my track and talked to me? The Indy Racing League. Indy Racing League actually sent a driver to my track in their grassroots campaign. They handed out T-shirts, stickers, everything else to the fans in the stands. But NASCAR doesn't want any involvement or doesn't do anything about
it. No, they're kicking us to the roadside.
I tell you what, Mike, you get the number from the Indy people and give it to me. I'll get a hold of Danica Patrick, and we'll have a nice weekend on the beach.
No, anyway.
The other thing is we're going to take a break real quick. We got to take a break. Mike, stay on the line. Paul, stay on the line. And, John, don't go anywhere.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a break, pay some bills real quick. It's been a real good show so far. Once again, if you want to call in, the phone number is area code 941-423-7104 or 228-8359. This is Inside Florida Racing.
Hey, Mike, thank you for answering those questions.
Yeah. I guess I'm born to be a loser. Lord, a loser just can't win. If I can't be your lover, woman, let me be your friend. Maybe I took a little bit too much for granted when I fell in love with you. But the killer can't have it, baby.
All right, we're here at Lakeland USA International Speedway. Another one of the best races that we've seen here. Jeff Schofield, it looked for a minute there like you were going to turn a so-so run into a winning effort. Tell us about the closing laps of this race.
We just had a great race car. You know, we was out there just kind of riding around at the beginning, top five, stayed there consistent. And we made a few changes in the pits, and you know, the guys did an excellent job, got me back out there in the front. And as we came back out, you know, we saved our equipment a little bit. We rode about 20 laps, and I guess around 150, 160 or so, they started sliding around a little bit, and we took advantage of it. I mean, I think 10 laps when I got ready to go, we was in the lead, and there we was half straightaway ahead. You know, we hated to see the caution come out. That just it killed us. And I guess Roger's oil line come off, you know, right there on that last restart, and he came in, and, he leaked all his oil out, and unfortunately, we were the guinea pig, started on the pole there, and we got into his oil a little bit, and, you know, wasn't nothing we could do about it, and we just, unfortunately, you know, the next restart was the same way, but, you know, they all seen that, you know, half throttle instead of full throttle, so we had a definitely good race car. You know, it's a shame to see it happen, but, you know, hard to run against the series right now that ain't really supporting you too much, so we're going to be back. You know, we'll run it, but we're going to run around a little bit and have some fun.
All right, man. Good to see you back out here, though, at Lakeland for sure.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it.
Power Master is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. Power Master is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. Power Master also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Race fans! Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Daryl Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drotty, and more will be on hand for the 100 lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
Monday evening to you. It is
Carnite.com, your online racing community.
What'd you do to me over there? You're pressing buttons.
Go for it.
You look at people. Hey, Mike.
These guys are having their own show.
They're having their own show over there.
You're not allowed to talk on break. No talking on break.
Pay the bills. We're going to talk racing.
Well, that's all right. That's all good. Now,
hey, Mike, hold on. I want to ask you something, Mike. You were talking about you're going to go to racing maybe on Saturday nights. Do you think that Citrus being so close to you, that's going to have an effect on you guys' little deal that you got going up there?
I don't think it'll have an effect on it at all, because what we've realized now that we've done it going on almost a year, completed this, they'll get maybe one or two cars from Ocala on Saturday night, and I'll get maybe one or two cars from Inverness. You just have your guys that like to race at Inverness, and you have your guys that like to race at Ocala. One of the things that I mentioned earlier was I think it's important for neighboring or closer tracks that are working together to work together. One of the reasons for that is, let's say I'm having a 50-lap sportsman race and it's 1,000 to win. I could get their sportsman off on Saturday night, and then those guys could come over and they're under the same. You see what I'm saying? Then they're, if the tracks are already under the same rules, when you set up the schedule in that fashion, it's very easy for guys to come over from the neighboring track. And we would intentionally, you know, if they have a 50 lap street stock race, 1,000 to 1, I'll give my street stocks off that night and send them all over to Inverness and go tell them to go over there and race. I get asked often throughout the year, hey, how do you feel about us going and racing at New Smyrna for that race, or down at John's, or Auburndale, or Inverness? Man, and I say, you know what? We're racing on Friday night, guys. Go down there and take some money from them. Take your car. If I had a race car, I'd be there. Take your race car down there and race. Support the tracks. Go. Doesn't matter to me who owns it or who's running it or whatever. Go to the track.
How do you, John, how do you feel about a driver that comes to you and say, hey, there's a big race down the road. I want to go race there. You got a problem with that?
Not at all. Go ahead and support any track that you can support. I'm 100%, 110% for it. And, you know, just I just hope they come back to me and they just, you know they're there back the following week and the following week after that. I mean, you know, if somebody's got a big street stock race and these guys want to go ahead. And if I can, I'll plan it off. If they want me to, I'll plan it off. So they, you know, eight or nine guys say, hey, I want to go to Ocala. Well, I'll, you know, just put something else in there.
Good deal, good deal. Now, Paul, this is going to kind of pertain to what we were talking about a little bit ago, and then it's also going to fall back here on the track owners. From what I got from the whole argument earlier is that you want to be an informed race fan, correct? Hello, Paul.
Yeah.
What I've got from this is that you want to be an informed race fan, correct?
Absolutely.
And you, what's that?
Absolutely.
How many tracks do you go to, Paul?
Say again?
How many tracks do you go to?
Well, I've been to Citrus, DeSoto, Charlotte, New Smyrna, Orlando. I haven't made it to Ocala yet, but I can tell you after this phone conversation, that'll be probably one of my tracks I'll go hit.
Do you go regular? Paul, do you
up around racing northeast all the way down to the south?
Paul, do you go every?
I probably hit about seven or eight tracks.
Paul, do you go every week to some racetrack somewhere, or is it you just hit and miss?
I do attend every week at a local racetrack.
Good.
Okay. Well. Good deal. Here's my idea. Here's my idea for the promoters. I mean, you guys got a lot on your plate anyway, but here's something else that could be thrown at you. I think as a race fan showing up to my local track or anybody's local track during the week, I'd like to know the state of the affairs that the track is in. Situation, Charlotte County Motorsports Park, when it used to be called Charlotte County Speedway, several fans, drivers, everybody around was in fear that place was going to get bulldozed. I don't see a problem in a track owner saying, well, we've had, you know, putting something, a write-up every month in their program or even on their website of this is the state of our racetrack.
I think it's something, you know, being informed is a good thing. It's when people are uninformed or misinformed, however you want to take it. Well, that's how rumors start, and that's how, you know, track
right,
owners
well,
have to start putting out fires and you know, coming on message board.
The way I see it, Paul, I think a perfect thing would be like once a month the track owners have, you know, they put out a newsletter to the fans of what's going on with the track. We've had a good month, you know. Everything looks good. We got some other races coming up. We had these races. We had these issues. We think we got them sorted out. And just, a short couple, two or three paragraphs about what's going on, what happened that month, and what's coming up.
Well, that's a good thing for you, Jason, to call every track owner once a month and ask us and write a little publication and
well,
send it out
okay,
for us.
So
and
do,
I'll answer
so
it.
So do you want 50 or 100 people coming up to you in one night on a Saturday night going, John, what's going on with your track, man? What happened last week?
You
and what do you got going on next month?
You can't get to me on
Can you
Saturday
tell me what's
night.
Going on in th-
first
two or three
of all,
weeks? You got a big race coming up?
First of
now,
all,
here comes
that's
the second
what my
guy, John.
That's
John, what's going on to your track?
That's what he's telling you though, John, and
yeah.
He's telling you need to put it, have him put it into your flyer, into your
Instead
program.
Well, that's what I have my program. That's what I have my schedule on there.
Yeah, that's cool.
And if somebody
Mr. Angie's, you better fire up your pin, buddy.
On our homepage at Ocala Speedway, we have a manager page. It's a link. You click on it, and it talks about recent affairs and different things and, you know, the goings-on at the Speedway, really. It's called the manager's page. There's something very important that I think we need to talk about. And that's the state of traveling series in Florida.
Amen. John say amen.
Amen.
I hate it.
And this is a multifaceted problem as well. Not pointing any fingers at any individual in particular or anything else or any series in particular. But one of the things that I see as a problem from the track owner's standpoint is treating your track like it's a revolving door to some of these series. You know, look, basically you're booking a show or signing a contract to book a show at your track, and if they come and it's not a show, and then you've got them on the schedule three more times that year, how many advertising dollars am I going to be willing to spend to throw at that show? Because fans are going to look at it and they're going to say, oh, you know what, I went to that show last month, and it's, again, no, hon, let's go get Chinese food and rent a movie instead. We'll go to the track next weekend, okay? Here's part of the problem as I see it. John Doe gets pissed off at the series owner or promoter. And guess what? John Doe decides he's going to go start his own series now. So now instead of that series having 20, whatever vehicles were in it, 20 or 25, now they've got 10, and now they've got 10. And that's a problem. That's part of...
Yeah, but Mike, we made this problem. Mike, we made this problem.
And the way that you fix it is by you and Ocala and the man that owns Citrus get together and have your own series. To me, as the driver, okay, that used to run a traveling series all over the state of Florida, there is no traveling series that goes to Charlotte County Speedway, to DeSoto, to your track, to Citrus, to Lake City, to New Smyrna, to Orlando, well, to Lakeland. That would be a traveling series, okay? The guy that won the most of those races or led the points and that all over, that would be great.
Well, I mean, I tell you what, I would love that.
Yes, and John would love it. And you know what? He would be right there to do his part as the track owner to make that happen. Are the rest of the guys going to be right there to do their part to make it happen? And could it happen? I really don't think so.
I got to say something here. I got to intervene here. Hey, you know, it's like Don DeRone has the Sunbelt Series, okay? And he brings it to all these different racetracks. The reason why I never brought the Sunbelt was in because I don't get the entry fee. I don't get the tires. I don't get the fuel. Okay, when I opened my own Super Late Model Series and started the AACS7 6 years ago, that's why I did it. I couldn't afford to pay $17,000, and if they didn't bring me a good crowd or whatever it was, you're gambling with my dollar, and I just couldn't do that. So that's why I have my own Super Late Model Series, but I believe that the state should have one Super Late Model Series, one Sprint Car Traveling Series, the TBRA. Keep all the other cars at the racetracks where they belong, and that's the way it goes.
Well, I agree, and I'd like to see one that goes to all the tracks. But beyond that, if Ocala and Citrus would work together, being close to each other, if Charlotte County and yourself at DeSoto would work together.
It's a done deal.
Late model series and great truck racing. Imagine potential of DeSoto and Charlotte County.
I tried it in the beginning of the year with Bobby, and he backed out of the deal. And, you know, I just don't know what he did, but he just said he got nervous. He backed out of the deal, so I did the 17 races, and I did it next year. Maybe we'll do something different. I don't know. But, like, you are 100%
A meeting called with all the drivers that would be affected in the truck series and the late model series, just like you said, and you offer them some kind of free purse to the first race there?
It's very, very hard to get everybody there together, and then you have 150 answers, questions. It gets out of control. That's why we as promoters, owners, track owners need to set the precedence, need to set the buoys what we need to do.
Yeah, you guys have to make the schedule, so it only would be smart for you to do that.
Well, here's
Mike, do you guys, I mean, you talked about a minute ago when I asked you if you went to Saturdays, if you thought that you would, you know, jump onto Citrus's stuff there that's going on. And something I wanted to ask you real quick about that, do some of your guys that run on Friday night go over to Citrus and run on Saturday night?
Right. What we found up until this point in time so far this year, what we have found is two or three of my guys will go race at Inverness. If there's nothing wrong with their cars or they don't damage their cars, they may go to Inverness on Saturday night. And maybe only two or three of their guys will come over and race on Friday night at Ocala because they don't want to tear up their cars for their race on Saturday night at Ocala.
Okay, so if you're racing Saturday night, though, are they going to race at your track or are they going to race at Citrus?
I don't know. I guess they'll race wherever they like.
Well,
to
exactly. As a track owner, though, you're going to care if you go to Saturday night and all of a sudden you have a worse car count than you had on Friday nights, which I think the car count that you're getting on Friday nights is not that bad.
Mike, didn't you say you already switched to Saturday nights?
To be honest with you.
Mike, I think he's right too, because Saturday night is the race night. Friday night is a movie night. You got people, employees coming. You got employees coming into work. They're getting off their job. Let me tell you something right now. When I worked at Orlando Friday night, man, 8 o'clock we started racing. Them guys weren't getting there to 6, 7 o'clock. It was hard.
Right.
It was very hard.
I'll just tell you this. I've had requests from probably 10 to 12 locals just in Ocala area, in Ocala, that are no longer racing because I took Ocala Speedway back to Friday night.
I got to agree with you, Mike, 100%.
There's 10 to 12 guys that either sold their cars or have cars in their garages that have approached me off and on over the last year and a half that said, you know, if we weren't doing it on this night, I'd be here. I just can't get here. I have to work till 8 o'clock on Friday night, or you know, whatever the reason.
Saturday night, Mike. I think you're gonna hit a home run. I think that's what you need to do, and I think you're doing the right thing of trying it on Fridays. But Saturday night, I think is the right way to go.
When are you gonna make that switch?
Well, that's just something that's in the thought. It's the question was, are there any changes in the future? That's one of the changes that we're looking at in the future.
Mike, I got a question for you. This is Jason. Have you? I mean, that's something that you've probably already thought long and hard about, switching to that Saturday night. And here we've been talking about tracks working together or anything. Have you approached Citrus, seeing as how they are your closest neighbor, and said to them that, you know, I'm thinking about going to Saturday nights, and have you talked to them?
We talked about it very briefly, but it was, like I said, it's nothing that's actually on the front burner right at this point in time. I was answering Paul's question when he put it on the Internet, basically kind of a changes down the road or changes in the future. It's nothing that's in stone. It's just something that we've kicked around, and I wanted to express why I had kicked it around or given it some or put some thought to it.
Okay, good deal. I got a question for you, for Mike and for John. As a promoter, who's more important to you, your race fans or your racers?
Everybody.
No one supersedes anyone.
No.
I mean, you can't.
You're both important to us at the back gate, the front gate, the fans, the employees. You can't single not a one person out. Everybody is important to us.
You can't have a race without one, though.
Mike?
I have to agree with John on that one. I find myself wearing both of those hats on Friday nights. You know, I'll spend half my evening in the grandstand area, and then I also spend half my night answering drivers' questions. And, you know, we've got an open-door policy, and I've been at the track till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with the drivers waiting outside to speak, especially the first year. It seems to have subdued some, and maybe I'll have one at the end of the race night that wants to talk, or maybe two, but, you know, I'm always available, and I always do my best to listen to what they have to say and answer their questions the best that I can and be as honest as I can.
When you track owners and promoters walk around on a Saturday night or even during the week, I mean, this is for both of you again there, John, when you guys walk around, I mean, and you're looking at your track and you're seeing your fans around, do you try to put yourself in the driver's shoes, in the fan shoes, and try to think about what can I do different?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been a driver, I've been a fan, I've built cars, I've done everything. And of course I do. And every minute I look at it from each, it's so hard to get a perspective. If you don't have an open mind, and you got to realize one thing, every call that you do at the racetrack, you have to make this call. And like I'll tell guys 9 out of 10 times, you'll get the good call, but there's going to be one or two bad calls you're going to get, or you think it's bad. But you know what? At the spur of the moment,
yes,
we got to do what we got to do.
We have somebody on the board that says one of our guests is not truthful. I wonder which one that is.
I'm not a guest.
Whoever you are, call in and tell us who's not being truthful and why. It seems to me like everybody's been straight up.
Who was the person on
somebody
the
named Blai, or I can't see really
B-L-A-I,
good.
Blai. Blai.
Blai.
Blai. Blai.
Well, I will say this.
I know it's for me. I guarantee it.
I'd like to answer that question you just asked as well, as far as putting yourself in the driver's shoes or the fan's shoes.
Yes.
And I'll give you some examples of how I do that. Okay.
Okay.
From my driver's perspective. Okay. I understand the costs associated with building these cars, bringing them to the track week in and week out. I do everything I possibly can to keep my back gate at a reasonable level, okay, from entrance fees to no tire requirements to no fuel requirements and so forth down the list, and offering a modest purse, okay. I don't feel as though it needs to come out of the drivers that are coming in the back gate. I made a post on the Internet a week ago just to share the expense of one race, and it wasn't because I was trying to demonstrate that that race should have paid for itself. It was because I was trying to just get some legitimate answers from people. Okay, well, what is a fair number then that a particular race should be able to at least cover a certain percentage of itself? What's a fair number? What do the race fans think a fair number is? But nobody to date has answered that question. As far as the fans' perspective, my staff, we still got some improvements to make, some work to do, but my staff has gotten my racing down to, we start at 7:30 on the clock every Friday night. My latest night this year is 11:45. Why? Because I want my fans to come back. I don't want my fans sitting in the stands at 2 o'clock in the morning going to sleep, okay? We are at the point now where we can complete 8 to 9 feature events from 7:30 at night to 11 o'clock at night, and it's gotten very efficient. one of the posts on the internet was, okay, boycott the tracks, and if you got $1,500 to go spend or whatever, go race at that track. There has not been a race at my facility this entire year that a driver had to pay $1,500 to come race at. My highest payout of the year at any particular race this year was the Powell Memorial, okay? And if you wanted to buy a set of tires, it cost you $440. You want to pay an entrance fee, $150. Let's say you brought five people into the pits with you. Let's say you brought seven people into the pits with you. Okay, $740 is what it costs you to come race at the Powell Memorial, the highest paying purse of the year for me at that track. So I don't know where $1,500 came from. Of course, that's not including the associated costs with maintaining the equipment and the car and, you know, your rig and everything else. But
hey, Mike,
as far as actually what you pay to come into this race at that particular race,
Mike,
wasn't $1,500.
Mike, I want to say something. As somebody that has a late model, you could easily spend $1,500 to go run the Powell Memorial, depending on where you came from, because you'd have to stay in a hotel, you got to pay for your guys, and you've also got to pay for all the fuel in your vehicle and in there. So it's, if I buy one set of tires and go race at anybody's race, it's $800 is what it costs you to run a late model. So these guys that buy two sets of tires, easily they could spend that kind of money. So you have to give credit where credit's due, and that is that all your drivers that come to your racetrack, okay, spend good money to have their car there. And every one of your drivers in every class has spent many hours working on that race car, just as you as the track owner has spent many hours for your day to come. They've spent many hours for their day to come.
I don't mean to be rude, but we got to cut this right now. We got to break.
For?
Well,
your point. Your point.
Absolutely.
Your point.
I'm not trying to debate that whatsoever. My only point was, I'm not trying to hit you up even further when you get to my back gate. That's all, because I already know what's gone and what the process that has been involved just to get your car to that point.
Well, I'm telling you right now, this has been very, very informative, very, very interesting so far. I want to thank Paul for being on with us. Paul, you still there? Hello, Paul, you there? Okay, I guess Paul left. Mike, if you want to hang out a little bit more and answer
that
some
would
more
be good.
Questions.
It would be good,
because
we have some other callers that want to ask some questions, so if you can hang out.
I want to know who's not telling the truth. That's what I want to know.
Hey, guys.
I want to know who's not telling the truth.
Hey,
I want to know.
The truth? Is that the truth? What's the truth?
The truth.
Is that a ute? A ute and a truth?
Once again, we're going to take a break here, pay some bills. We'll be right back right here in Inside Florida Racing.
Bye.
Race fans, Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Daryl Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drotty, and more will be on hand for the 100-lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion: to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, Short Track Asphalt, Short Track Dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today, 5starbodies.com.
Hey, my name is Roger Rudeman. You're listening to Real Racing USA.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
I'm Racing Movie Man at USA Speedway, and you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Good Monday evening to you. Welcome back to Inside Florida Racing.
Good for you.
Oh, yeah. It is good for me.
Where's those callers at?
My phone hasn't rang. It's
Where's
good
those
for
callers?
Me.
Let me hear you. Where you at, callers?
Check it out, callers. Get your pen and pieces of paper out. I'm going to give you the number to call to put you on the spot, or if you want to put these track owners and promoters on the spot. Phone number is area code 941-423-7104 or 941-228-8359.
I think we have Scott Jackman joining us. Scott, you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Did you want? What did you want to throw into this mix?
Well, first of all, I mean, there's a lot of things y'all touched on that I have a feeling about. Mike and I were talking about it while you were off there, that Karnak is a, you know, it was designed for racing and all that, and it was designed for good, and there's people that will turn it around and use it for bad.
Bad.
You know, it's just like the internet was built for good, and people use it for bad sometimes, but all in all, you know, if I need to get something out there and I don't have everybody's email address or anything, I can throw it up there, and then they get the information where they should, because everybody talks about going on there and getting it. As far as your track owners, I haven't run across one yet that treated me any less than wonderful. Mike and his wife, John and his wife, everybody's just very accommodating for the series when we go out and travel. And the comment that the gentleman made about the cost of the tickets at Lakeland, and I know John and Mike can probably shed more light on this, no pun intended, but how much it costs to turn the lights on at USA. I myself sat down one night and said, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to take this traveling series, the Southern Sportsman and the Florida Mini Stock Challenge, and if my count's right, I got 9 tracks. I could run 9 races. Wouldn't have to go back twice if something fell apart or it just wasn't a good show or something like Mike was talking about. You know, are they going to come back and see it again? You know, but to do a scheduling meeting and try to do it all in one afternoon, I don't believe can be done. It's impossible. And there again, you've got, you know, the forces that, you know, people are saying, well, okay, we'll do this, but when they walk out of that door at East Bay, then it's thrown to the wind. And we're the ones that somewhat suffer from it, because, meaning us who work for the traveling series and things like that, because we don't have the power to do it. I'm the race director for the Goodyear Challenge Series, Florida Mini Stock Challenge, and the Southern Sportsman Series. I'm not the promoter. I don't have time, number one, to do that during the week, because I drive a truck during the week. So, you know, it's like we have to suffer because the powers that be are bickering all the time. You know, why can't we go by the same set of rules? Why can't we get along, per se?
Here's the thing. And everybody's
it's not
been
difficult. It really is.
Well, no, it's
basically
oh, watch,
as far
yeah.
as the traveling series, you're giving the racer a chance to try different tracks. You're giving them a chance to be seen by other people. And, you know, we've got a great crop of rookies in the Goodyear Challenge Series as well as veterans. Mike can tell you, my last 2 Goodyear races, I had 9 cars at Lake City. I had 10 cars at Ocala. Now, back to the track owner's deal, Mike still has to pay that purse, and he doesn't have all those other class or other cars that should have been there to help make up the money in the pits and all that. And I feel bad for Mike because, okay, did I do everything I could?
Well,
once again,
you know,
you
were talking.
I can't throw extra money,
Scott,
at him. I can't. You know, I don't have these.
Scott, you were talking about the tracks trying to get together and work along in the same set of rules. You know, and I've been in the racing business a long time from the racer's point of view and the fan's point of view, but I'm not saying that anybody with the traveling series is a bad person or anything like that. But I kind of look at a lot of the traveling series.
quite a few of them, not all of them, as, you know, the dark side, the evil empire. Because, you know, you have the mini stock series, the traveling series that came along when I built myself a modified mini. And everybody's leaving the, you know, their home tracks to go travel on this mini stock series. You know, the street stock series or whoever they are, because I totally ignore them. It's like John said earlier, you need to keep those at your home tracks. You can have a late model touring series, a super late models. You can have TBARA. You know, those are fine. But you're not going to get all these tracks to conform to the traveling series rules.
The TBARA is the most exciting traveling series that is going on in the state of Florida today. And they travel to a lot of racetracks. And you know why? They do their own deal. They got their whole deal done. Okay? And they've been doing it for a long time. I wish that there was a late model series that was like the TBARA. Just throw an LM in there somewhere and I'd be there running with them. I think it'd be great. But there's not. So you have to do like – it still goes back to you have to support your tracks that are local by you. If there's two of them, you have to support those
two
racetracks.
Okay, we have two track owners here that need to probably answer that question. The ball's in their court.
What's the question?
The question is about the traveling series, okay, and their rules and the track promoters and everybody trying to get along and go by the same set of rules.
They answered that.
This is my opinion, and like I said before, I answered that question, and I don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings out there, but I just really, I would like to see the cars stay at all racetracks and have just two series in the state and be done with it, and I think it would be a lot better for everybody, but that's my opinion.
Mike, how do you feel about that?
I think there's a need for some traveling series in the state. I mean, the best traveling series in the state, in my opinion, is TBARA, obviously.
We're all agreed.
There's a lot of value to it, and they put on a great show. I think there's a need for it, and I think drivers want to be able to travel around and race at different tracks. My beef or my bone of contention is when this guy gets ticked off at that guy and then wants to start a series and then kills that series because half of them are going over there and half of them are going over here. That's the thing I got a problem with, you know. And I mean, I got a call from somebody a month or two ago that wanted me to put him on the schedule for Friday night. We already had 8 feature races scheduled that night. There just wasn't room. But my question to them is, why aren't you racing with your series? Well, they're going out of town, and I don't want to go out of town. Well, I can't just turn around and put you on the schedule, and then you show up with 5 cars because your 5 cars didn't want to follow your series. You signed up to race with a series at the beginning of the year. Race with the series. Give that series the value that it needs so that it keeps getting track dates and play and venues to go race at. That's my problem. You know, that's my point of contention.
Yep. Scott, you still there?
Scott? Hello, Scott.
Yeah, I'm hearing Mike real well, but I'm having trouble hearing you guys.
Okay.
As far as the rules of these series is, I mean, the track owners don't really, as far as I know, at least I never have. I mean, I've never had any say in what rules go into any particular traveling series. You know, I mean, we got enough to handle with the rules just at our track and the partnership that we set up with, you know, our neighbor track, Citrus County. I really don't have any involvement in the rules of any given series. It would make sense to me. I'd like to see it go back to a little bit more old school. You know, some of the best advice I've gotten, at least so far in this business, came from Tom Curley at the beginning of the year last year at the owners and promoters meeting. And one of the things that he said was stop trying to emulate NASCAR. Bring short track back racing to what it is.
Yes.
It's short track racing.
Yes.
Okay? I'd like to see claimers come back. I'd like to see claimers come back. These are all the things that are...
You hear that, open wheel modifieds? Claimers. Claimer engines, all you big motor sissies.
For these drivers, maybe we'll have more drivers show up if they know they don't have a $60,000 motor and they've got 4 sets of tires that they have to buy when they go to the track Friday night. I am trying to come up with a feasible way to implement a tire rule at Ocala Speedway next year. I'd like to see all that stuff come back. I think that's what we need in the state to try and get more people to come out and race again, is bring the cost, really try and make a genuine effort of bringing the cost back down. And, you know, if you look back over the history of this stuff,
back in the day, I wasn't around then. I mean, I'm a young guy at this business, but back in the day, look at the stuff that went on. You know, there were claimer rules on motors or whole cars or tire rules or this or that, you know.
Hey, Mike, Mike.
Of course, any of that stuff only works as good as you enforce it.
I got a perfect example for that claimer rule right there. I love open-wheel modified racing. I absolutely love it to death. A lot of horsepower, 8-inch tires. It's awesome. It puts it all back in the driver's hands. Back in the early 90s, you could go to any track in the state of Florida on any given Saturday night, and you could have 16 to 25, and if you're lucky, maybe even 28 open-wheel modified show up at your track, and they had a claimer rule. They had a claimer rule on their cars. You go ahead, build your big motor. Go ahead, build whatever you want to in your motor. But I tell you what, when you come into tech and that guy's sitting back there in fifth spot wants to buy your motor, you're selling it.
What do you think, John?
I don't care for claimer stuff. I'll be honest with you on that.
The claimers were there, okay? When the class started, it was an entry level into a faster class. It was after street stocks, you got a modified. It had all stock parts on it when it first started.
Yep.
It had a stock type motor in it. Today, you've got the same suspension parts that you
we
have
all
on,
let it,
on
we late all models. Let we all let it get out of hand.
That's right. So for what it is today, it'd be tough. You'd have to put a $10,000 claimer on it today, you know, because to build a fast motor, you're going to spend that kind of money.
Right. Still, I don't think a $10,000 claimer is that
bad.
You can't
be the only track,
especially nowadays,
because the guys with high dollar stuff aren't going to come to your track and race.
Right. There has to be. John put it out earlier that he did the 75-pound thing. And depending on the track, obviously the guy with the big motor that goes to Lakeland is probably going to be towards the front at the end. But at the other racetracks, John's included, his track is not as big as Lakeland. He's got a big short track is what he's got. So it has short track nature to it. Charlotte County, of course, is small. I think they don't even need to worry about the weight there.
Give them a gear rule.
That's not a bad thing. We've done that already.
John, we have a question. We have a question from you off of the message board there. And,
you got a question from John on the message board? That's a pretty neat trick.
It's for you, John. And this guy named Rick wants to know when Tony and he are going to get their own luxury booth with closed circuit TV.
What's wow.
Rick, you hear that?
Why would they need closed circuit TV? They
Camille's
got the best
mad at
seat
you.
In the house.
What's going on?
They got the best seat in the house. Why do they need?
Do you have employees calling here complaining?
I guess so.
Yeah, here you go. We're trying to get.
Hey, I want to say one thing.
All I want is a better PA system.
All the racers, and the fans need to bring somebody to these racetracks that have never been here before. Give them the excitement. Take somebody. And bring them, say, come to the races. I'm racing this week. Get all your friends, your neighbors, your uncles, your aunts. That's how it gets started. You have to get them to taste it, feel it, and touch it.
NASCAR has kind of put a damper to me, I think, on small racetracks today on local racing. I think local racing does need to come back into people's mind and realize that there is racing outside of that TV. You got to get out there. You got to sweat at the racetrack. You got to drink a beer. You got to have a hot dog.
Get off these computers. Get off, you know, and come out and see what it's like about. Buy a ticket and come down and enjoy yourselves and see what it's all about and bring the kids.
Yeah, and you'll see when you come to this.
There were some very good points brought up in some of those posts during the week. And I'll just address one or two other things that were brought up on there. You know, somebody mentioned the fact of sponsoring the divisions. Last year at Ocala Speedway, we had 7 division sponsorships for all the divisions. This year, during the off season, we had them all lined up. 3 of them backed out a couple weeks before the season started. Once the season gets kicked off, you're a little bit busy, and it's a little bit difficult to go out and get a sponsorship coming in the door, such as a division sponsorship and sponsoring the division for the entire year. But as far as sponsorship goes, I've got the TVRA sponsors at Ocala. I mean, I've got a whole gamut of sponsorships that have opened up to us. Now, granted, I had to mend some relationships in the community because commitments weren't lived up to before as far as sponsorships and packages that were offered to some businesses and different venues around Marion County. But people are receptive now. I think a lot of that has healed, and there's a lot more involvement out at the track. We got 55 signs along the back straightaway at Ocala Speedway. When I bought the track, I think there was about 3 signs that had been being paid for, okay? I couldn't go down and rip every single sign down and just have blank signs along the track, so I tried to selectively go through and pick businesses that maybe weren't even in business anymore and still leave the sign up and spend the next year, Angie and I, rebuilding those relationships with those businesses, getting them back on board as sponsors. That's one of the reasons I mentioned that I feel as though my track is on the rebound and it's in the building stages and it's going to continue to be there for a while. But it's moving in a great direction. It's moving in a real positive direction. But one of the persons commented that drivers or fans could also do their part as far as trying to help bring sponsorships into the track. And I'm not coming on here trying to be derogatory or say anything negative about my local driver base. I love the guys that come out to the track. I do my very best to treat them all with respect and treat them all the same week in and week out. And I have some great drivers at my facility that go above and beyond with trying to bring in sponsorships for particular races, even for their division. So I just want to commend them for that while I'm on the air. But that's a very good point that the person brought up on the Internet the other day.
Yeah, most of your sponsors at your local racetracks come from your local division racers that hook you up with those guys, don't they?
Sure.
Yeah. John, you too, probably.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. I mean, that's... You're in the community, you're talking to these people, you're trying to get their employees to come out, you're trying to give them a Budweiser night or a Pepsi night, right, or and whatever it is night it is, and make them feel at home, you know. And like I said, you take those sponsors and you try to, you know, hand groom them.
Good deal, good deal. Real quick, we got to go back to break again real quick, but before we go, I got a quick question for Mike and a quick question here for John. If your drivers come up and say, listen, my sponsors and everything, they've got maybe five people that work on them, I want to bring them out to the track, can you guys give me five tickets so I can get my sponsors in? Do you guys do that?
Yes.
I have done it in the past. I've given out a couple of passes, this and that, for them to come in and you know, come by and see us and have a night on us, and I have done that.
Cool, cool. Awesome. Well, Mike, I want to thank you for coming on. And real quick before we go to break, you got anything big coming up? Hello, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, we're going to have to let you go. We're going to take a break. But before we go, what do you got coming up at your racetrack?
Man, October, we got a late model challenge between Inverness and Ocala again. Week apart, another $1,000 bonus for Twin 50s at Ocala, Twin 50s at Inverness. I got, of course, 12 hours of Ocala coming up in October. It's a daytime event this year. Got a couple cars coming as far as Maine to compete in the event this year.
Wow.
Got the TBRA coming back on the schedule in November. I do have one open date in November that I'm looking at creating an end-of-the-year big late model race similar to the Powell Memorial, of that size or that scale. Letting it be our own event that we created and started on our own. And then we'll finish up the year with the highest paying enduro race in the state anymore, the $10,000 Turkey Run 150 at Ocala Speedway.
John's already got his calculator out. He's doing the numbers on a new a new pay scale for his enduros, man.
Mike, I want to personally thank you very much for being on the show tonight, for giving us your honest answers, and for putting up with us on the board. Thank
Guys,
you so
anytime,
much.
And anybody that wants to talk to me anymore or ask me any other questions, please call me at the Speedway.
Well, anytime. We wish you and Andrew the very best. Thank you
Thank
again.
You.
Thanks, Mike.
Good
thanks
night, lot, Mike.
See you later.
Hey, Mike, thanks for being a track owner.
And Scott you. Jackman, thank you for calling in.
That was from Bonehead, by the way.
Good night, guys. Thank you very much.
We'll be back in a minute.
Write this number down real quick, 941-423-7104 or 941-228-8359. This is Inside Florida
Real Racing USA.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to Five Star Race Car Bodies. Five Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, Five Star has one driving passion: to help you win. Five Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, Short Track Asphalt, Short Track Dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today at fivestarbodies.com.
Hi, I'm Wayne Rudiman, and you're listening to Real Racing USA. On a night that something I've never seen, Wayne Anderson being lapped at USA International Speedway, coming back and damn near stealing the show. How did this night come about?
Well, early in the race, battery was going dead, and it only run about half throttle. So I was trying to carry it as long as I could, and then Draughty lapped me. About five laps after I got lapped, there's a caution. That's, you know, go figure. So we come in and change the battery, but we didn't have enough time to change tires. So I went back out, and Lord knows it'd be another 40, 50 laps. We went, I think, 160 is when we come in and got tires. And then I had a rocket ship, but it was just too little, too late, you know, which I thought in my mind. I made up my lap, passed all, everybody got my lap back, and I checked out, and I was reeling in some of the back markers that were on the lead lap, and we got a caution. And it had five to go, and with five to go, I picked off what I could. So, One more lap, I think I'd have had some for him. But
well, in the last five laps, you jumped from, like, the top ten up right up onto Russell's bumper, huh?
Yeah, we got right there at the last lap. But he was, I think he got a little worried about me there a couple laps from the end because he started missing the corner a little bit and everything, which I don't blame him. They're probably hollering out on the radio, go, and he was doing all he could. And I mean, I'm proud of them. They did a good job, and I think my guys did a great job. So we just got up on the wheel there with about 40 to go and just made something out of nothing.
You know, this is talked about from time to time, but how tough is the heat here at Lakeland in the summer?
It was extremely hot for me tonight. I don't know why. I don't know if I was just, I mean, I was having to, trying to drive half throttle and the thing missing and you got cars around you. I just ended up just using parts of my body, muscles in my body that I didn't realize I had. But no, we just, you know, I don't give up behind that steering wheel. You know, I'm getting a little older. I mean, but, I see these young kids falling out of the seat, too, so I don't feel too bad.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Wade.
Thanks, buddy.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
Race fans! Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Daryl Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drawney, and more will be on hand for the 100 lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
Inside. Good Monday Inside. Evening. Welcome back to Inside Florida Racing. I am racing Jason Beckner along with Carol Wicks, Jack from Carnac, Bonehead Rob Elting, and to my right, the very illustrious Mr. John Sapkun. How you doing, John?
Hey, I'm doing good.
You having a good time today?
Oh, I'm telling you, I'm having a blast.
You look really relaxed.
Hey, Dave, could you turn your computer down maybe?
What the hell is he watching?
Are the TV down in the background?
Hey, David?
Yeah?
Can you turn your computer, TV, or whatever it is down a little bit? There you go.
Yeah, he was watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Welcome to Inside Florida Racing. David, nice to have you aboard.
Mr. David.
I can just barely hear you guys.
It's David Rogers.
Yes. Mr. David Rogers, how are you this evening? Can you hear me yet?
Can just barely hear you.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to Inside Florida Racing.
It's been a long time. I'm a little deaf.
I'm sorry. Well, I still got a big mouth, so I think we can work something out here.
Okay.
How was your race this weekend?
Well, the first 99% of it was real good, and the last percent was real bad.
Oops. Okay.
Hey, David, tell us about your race a little bit. Explain the ending of that race just a little bit from your perspective in the driver's seat.
Well, what happened from my point of view, you know, we had a real good race car all night, and we ran along there, and I'm not used to qualifying real good, so we started in the front, so got out and got the lead, and then Justin was a lot quicker than we were when at that point in the race, and so we just kind of let him go, not that we had a lot of choice, and he got away from all of us. And then toward the end of the race there, we still had a real good race car, and you know, the way things worked out, they we'd been starting single file restarts for whatever reason, and all of a sudden certain cars got laps down that they decided to start double file restarting, and I got turned a little sideways, and a couple cars got by me, and you know, but we still had a good enough car at that point. I think we could have still fought our way back, and I had to drive a little harder, but I think we could have still won the race. And then there toward the end, when the final caution come out, my car about 10 laps before the last caution, my car, Timmy Russell and I bumped a little bit. We caught a lap car. I was on the inside, and we caught a lap car, and me and Timmy bumped a little bit going through the corner. And I don't know, you know, maybe at that point it actually knocked a line loose, which sounds a little funny, but you're taking an impact. So from that point on, I had a little whiff of smoke, and I called the guys on the radio, and, you know, I said, I can smell smoke. Is y'all see it? And they said, yeah. But everything seemed to be okay, and then we had that final caution. Schofield was leading, and I was running second. And when they give us the one to go, you know, you start trying to warm your tires up, and I couldn't get the tires warm. It just spun the tires. So what ended up happening is we had the scavenge line on the oil pump come loose, and it was actually dumping oil under my own tires and evidently around the racetrack. So then when Schofield restarted the race, he restarted the race way back in the middle of the corner because he had a broke shifter, and so he started, you know, a little early, knowing that the Sunbelt bunch wasn't going to penalize him for that. So he had him a pretty good run, and he run up, and I guess I dumped oil down or whatever, and he run in my oil and spun out. And I still, you know, the guys are saying stay out, and I'm saying no, I'm not going to stay out here and tear up cars. I didn't know it was an oil leak. I thought my rear end was broke. It was that bad. So we came in, checked the rear end, and then we found it wasn't a rear end at all. It was just oil pouring out on the racetrack. So obviously we parked it to try to keep out everybody's way and keep from tearing up cars that didn't need to be tore up.
David, we've seen you at racetracks for a long, long time. When did you start racing? What got you started into racing?
You're going to have to speak louder.
Okay.
Sorry.
How long have you been involved in racing?
I've been racing since 1973. If anybody can remember back that far.
Hey, that's when I was
born. I can.
So what do you think about racing with these kids today, man? They kind of just drive right around us and just keep on going.
It's a really different world now than it was, you know, not just, you know, way back when, but even, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. Everything is getting younger kids and, you know, people with, you know, bigger budgets. And, you know, a lot of these people spend more money than I spend in 10 years. They spend it in a year, and it's hard to keep up. You know, used to it was more a matter of hard work. But now you can buy such good equipment that you can buy a kid that doesn't have a whole lot of experience excellent equipment and get him a good guy to work on the car, and they can win races.
David, we have two questions from the message board from Racing Photos. One of them is, what is the most memorable race of your entire career?
I can't hear you, ma'am.
What is your most memorable race of your entire career?
I guess probably my most memorable race of my entire career was not actually a race. It was a qualifying deal at Talladega when I was driving for Phil and Wally Finney, and we were qualifying, and the car actually blew over, and I tumbled down the front straightaway at Talladega at 200 miles an hour and ended up on pit road. You know, that was probably the most memorable racing experience I had. And then probably as good a racing experience as, you know, like winning the Governor's Cup, that was important to me. That was something that I tried long and hard to do. You know, we won 22 out of 22 races at Volusia County, which is still a surprise even to me that we could do such a thing.
And the next question, can you hear me now?
Just barely.
Okay. The next question is, what was your most memorable race in the Grand National Division?
He just said it.
You know, we ran Charlotte one time, and probably the most memorable deal was that happened at Charlotte. We ran Daytona and Talladega and Darlington, Rockingham, in our own stuff. And Dale Earnhardt Sr. and I became friends back years and years ago because we used to run Savannah, Georgia, and Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And Dale Sr. was always at those races. And I was at Charlotte one time, and we had pitted kind of out of sequence with everybody, and it just so happens that everybody pitted, and we were leading the race. The caution came out, and we were leading the race. So Dale pulls up beside me and points that, you know, I need to get, you know, they give us one to go, and he pulls up beside me and pointed that I need to get to the inside, and I pointed to the scoring tower and showed him that, you know, I'm leading the race, and he gives me the big thumbs up like, oh, good job, bud. I didn't know you were supposed to be up here. And, you know, and then, of course, by the time we got to the first corner, he blew by me, and I was running second, and then down the back straightaway I was about fourth. And I think we ran sixth that race, but that was probably my most memorable speedway experience, you know. And that was back when Dale Earnhardt Sr. and Ricky Rudd and Darrell Waltrip, people like that, were running the Busch Series, which was back at that time was the Sportsman Series.
Dave, you said you've been racing since 73. Where did you get your start? I mean, where'd you cut your teeth at?
I actually started racing at Ocala when it was dirt. My brother, who owned a stock car at the time, and a guy named Larry Flynn, who was a big dirt racer, drove my brother's car. He raced at Volusia County, and basically all I'd ever done was help him load the car on the trailer and worked on it. I'd never driven the car, and my brother called me one Sunday morning and said, hey, if you want to get a couple of your buddies and go to Ocala, they're going to race on Sunday afternoon. We had raced our final race at Volusia County for the season on Saturday night, and I said, oh, is Larry going to meet us? And he said, no, you drive the car. So I went up there, and my first race was at Ocala Speedway on dirt, and we ended up not changing the gear, which is probably worked out to my benefit, but it was pretty ignorant to do it that way. But we ended up finishing third in my first race, and it was pretty good because it was, if I remember, it paid $90 to run third in the feature. And so when we finally got home, of course, me and the two buddies that I'd taken had rode around the neighborhood and to all the places that we hung out showing off this race car. Of course, most people didn't know what it was, but we took them around. And when I got home, my mother was on the phone with my brother and said, oh, you know, Mario just came in. And he said, well, ask Mario how he did. And I said, oh, we ran third. And she said, oh, he says he ran third. And he's like, no, he didn't. And I said, I pulled out this $90, like, here, let me show you the big bucks, and showed her the $90, and she said, oh, my goodness, he's got $90. He must have did good.
Game was on, wasn't it? Oh, man. So you cut your teeth racing dirt. You've raced with Dale Earnhardt. You've rolled over at Talladega. Man, what haven't you done?
Well, in racing, I've done pretty much everything. Joe Harris, that used to work with me and help me all the time, he'd love to tell people that I'd hit every wall between Miami and New York. Of course, we never went way up to New York, but we did do a lot of racing, a lot of wrecking. You know, one year he and I run either 104 or 106 races in one year, and so yeah, we've done a whole lot.
Yeah, David, you know, this is Rob Elting, a.k.a. Bonehead. I've raced against you a couple times back in the day, and my favorite David Rogers moment, you might have to work with me here because I don't remember what racetrack we were racing at, but it was during the caution. I remember a David Rogers moment that had to do with a coil wire coming off a race car and going in the grandstands. Was that you?
Yeah, that was me.
What happened in that race on that day? Because I was racing in that race, and where was it? Was it at New Smyrna?
New Smyrna Speedway.
Yeah.
And I had got, you know, we had a pretty good race car, and I got into it with, I don't remember, it was
probably
one of the
Jack.
Burkett boys. I think it was Jeff Burkett, and
yeah.
He had crashed my car, and I kind of felt that he was responsible for the wreck, so I went on the front straightaway and voiced my opinion and thought, you know, instead of fighting and stuff like, you know, back in the day it was okay to fight. Now people sue you and own your company if you fight them. But, you know, back in the day when I started, of course, I started with Levi's and desert boots, and the T-shirt was my fire suit, too. But, you know, at that point I thought, well, you know, if I can't win this race, there's not any sense in you winning the race. So I kind of knew where his coil wire was, so I kind of crawled into the right window of the car and pulled the coil wire out and threw it in the grandstand. And luckily for me, it landed in one of my fans' hands, so they wouldn't give him the coil wire back. So they had to hold the race up so they could find the coil wire to put back into the Burkett car to get him cranked and running. But
that's
the story you're talking about.
That's my favorite David Rogers moment right there. You were having a moment, son, and I loved every minute of it, but I didn't find out until later on what really happened. So.
I tell you what, that one right there is going to have to get saved. We'll have to edit that one and leave it. We'll have to run that one during the commercials for now on. That is too funny.
Well, it definitely proved your point, David.
Well, sometimes if you do that, I guess it's better to do something like that than it is to fight and what have you. You can't do that nowadays. But
well, you know, we've got John Sapricone in here, the owner of DeSoto Speedway. And, you know, I asked John, I said, John, since you've owned the racetrack, has David Rogers been to your racetrack?
He told me he didn't think.
He didn't think many times. How many times have you raced at DeSoto Speedway?
You know, I've raced
Super
down
Speedway.
There quite a bit. We especially when it was new and, you know, DeSoto kept changing hands and was under different managements and stuff. And we ran, we've ran every kind of race you can run down there. They had I guess it was the icebreaker. And when the first or second icebreaker they had, it was kind of a one run what you brung deal. And we borrowed a car from Billy Gast, who was running dirt at the time, that had the big wedge bodies and all that stuff. And we put a brand new, to borrow his car, we put a brand new giant wedge body on it and painted it, worked all night long, and took off and went to Bradenton. And it was kind of a funny story because it was all aluminum body and had Budweiser as a sponsor then. And we put the big Budweiser bow tie on the side of the car. And by the time we got to Bradenton, we'd blown all the fresh paint off the car and the Budweiser decals and everything, and got down there and ran really good, set fast time, and Mike Eddy was there, and quite a few people was
Mike
there,
Eddie.
and ended up, the starter fell off the car and knocked the transmission, the rear end, just about totaled Billy's car out, so I spent more money rebuilding his stuff than what I could have ever made racing. But we've raced at Bradenton, because I really like Bradenton.
Hey, David, this is John from DeSoto Speedway. I'd like to see you come down and help us out with that icebreaker next year with Leroy Porter and everybody. You raced against him for a long time.
Just barely hear you, John.
You know, I'd like you to come down at DeSoto Speedway, try to make it down this year for the icebreaker. It'd be really great to see you down there and you know, with Leroy Porter down there, and we named that race after him. And it would be great to have you come down and race with us.
Well, I'd like to come back down there and race. You know, I've always liked the racetrack. It's a lot like Speed World. Everybody says I really love New Smyrna, and basically the reason I run New Smyrna because it was always running. You know, Clyde claimed to race 52 weeks a year, and that was my style of racing. And Bradenton was always one of my favorite racetracks.
Well, you know, like I said, anytime if you want to come down and practice, give me a call. I'll let you bring the car down. Come down and try it, and come and race with us once or twice.
We'll do it.
Thanks a lot.
Yep, that's an open invitation for Charlotte County Motorsports Park, too. Come on down. I'll get you in there.
David.
See how people treat you, David, when you become a...
I'm not on.
There you go.
What are you talking about? I'm not on. Be quiet.
You went off.
Hey, David.
Yes.
See how people treat you when you become a grizzled old veteran?
Yeah, it's different.
Hey, David, we'd like to see you more than the younger guys right now, man.
Yeah, I like, you know, they like to bring the old people in and let the kids beat up on them. It's legal.
No. I want to see these old people come in here and beat up on these kids. A little bit of child abuse. Come on.
It's really got to be something for you to be racing against the next generation of some of these drivers like Russell and some of the other ones who have children now that are beating you on the racetrack.
You know, it's funny you say that. It's like I'm racing against, first it was guys' kids that I raced with, and now it's their grandkids. It's like, no, maybe I am getting too old for this. You know?
Yeah, I thought I was getting old at 41. You must be tipping a little further than that.
I'm 52.
Well, David, I tell you what, you need to keep it up because there's not very many of you out there like that, and we appreciate you out there racing. We enjoy watching you race, and we really do appreciate you coming on the show with us.
Hey, David, who's your sponsors?
TM Ranch, Steve Holland. He's been with me for several years here, and, you know, right now he's still holding pretty tough, but no more than we're racing, it's really hard to get sponsors and keep sponsors. You know, if you're from Orlando, it's hard to get a sponsor when you're racing out of the Orlando area, and it's really made it pretty tough as far as that goes. But Steve still loves racing, and luckily for me, he's a good friend and been a great friend, and he's helped us over the years after the Budweiser deal went away. Steve come along and he's helped us and. He's been great help.
Well, David, we appreciate you coming on the show. You keep it up, and you just keep on digging, man. And hopefully we'll see you down this way sometime.
Okay.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. And you know, like I said, I'm kind of sorry I couldn't hear you real good, but I don't know if it's me or the telephones. It could be either one at this point, you know.
It's not the equipment.
It's okay. It's okay. You don't have to hear. All you got to do is go fast, turn left.
I can hear that part. Go fast and turn left.
Hey, David, try Disney World for a sponsor.
You know, it's kind of funny you say that. We tried Universal and really had them when Universal first came along, we really had them seriously interested in sponsoring the race car. But I think they sent people to, back at the time, they sent people to New Smyrna, and I think the people at Universal were thinking a lot grander mode than going to a place like New Smyrna where Clyde used to, you know, Clyde had the whole infield built out of old campaign signs and what have you. That was a little different than what they expected. I think they were thinking more on the scale of the Daytona International Speedway deal, so that deal kind of went away.
Yeah, maybe they got hit with a coil wire.
They could have, or I could have talked nasty in front of them. I'm not being real politically correct. That's one thing about being as old as I am. It's kind of hard to do an interview and control exactly what you say and how you say it.
Well, that's all right. You don't have to do that with us. Thank you very much.
We
got to
go. We
got
to go.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thank you. Amazing. Have a good night.
See you. Oh,
what a character. We could dedicate a whole show to him. Once again, oh no, we're not going anywhere, are we? We're not going anywhere.
What about
we're
the
going to
coil
break.
Wire story?
Oh, okay, well, good.
So we'll be thinking about that for a while.
We're gonna come right back.
John and Camille in the house.
Gonna talk to John Zappacone
when
from the
tears go down, right here. Like falling rain, you'll toss around and call my name. The way I do, your cheating heart will tell on you.
heart will pine someday and crave the love you threw away. The time will come when you'll be blue, your cheating heart will tell on you. When tears come down like falling rain, you'll toss around and call my name. You'll walk the floor the way I do. Your cheating heart will tell on.
Hey, my name is Buzzy Rudiman. You're listening to Real Racing USA.
I'm Racing Movie Man at USA Speedway, and you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
Whatever.
Good Monday evening, the extended edition of Inside Florida Racing. I am racing Jason Beckner over there in the black shirt, being thrown the black flag every lap.
Rob
Bonehead Elting.
Of course, yes.
And then the man throwing all the flags, Jack from Carnac.
Jack.
And
Jack
very beautiful Miss Carol Wicks.
Jack Mack. Let's go back where we started.
And the sleepy Camille Sapercone.
Let's go back where we started with this, Jason.
I can't believe it. Let's go back where we started with this. The man of the night has actually been John Sapercone from DeSoto Super Speedway, who threw the question out earlier why and how it was named DeSoto Super Speedway. And he said if anybody could answer that, he had two free passes, was it?
Yeah.
Two free passes. Anybody that can call in and answer why it's called DeSoto Super Speedway, you're going to get two free passes, and you can give us a call at 941-423-7104 or 941-228-8359.
How about we just give the passes away anyhow? Who cares?
Who are you going to give them to?
No, I want to know why you named it DeSoto Super Speedway.
Okay. I can't tell you that.
So, John, I know you got
to
have some
comments.
I can't
tell you that.
Hang on a minute. I know you got to have some comments about some of the things that Mike was delineating there, the questions and answers.
He had a lot of valid points. I mean, if you listen to what he had said, and it's a lot of valid points. And he's really looking to help to make racing go to the next level in Florida. And, that's what we're all trying to do. But, we keep getting stuff slapped in the face and turned around and upside down, and you try to always go to the next page and try to make everything better as much as we can.
Speaking of making things better, being a late model racer, I want to talk to you a little bit about your actual series that you run. You actually run a series of races for late models at your track that you have a point series, and
correct,
and you have prizes at the end. Talk about a little bit about your points.
I can't give you that information now.
None?
No, I can. I'm only kidding.
Is to kill me if you give it to me?
I started it like 6 years ago. Rick Day helped me get it, get it going, and it's a super late model series called the American AACS, All-American Challenge Series. We pay $30,000 points fund, $10,000 to the winner. We pay $400 to start a race. We run 12 to 14 races a year. And it's a really, we run it just at our track. And we've had really good support in this thing over the last 6 years. Gold ring and jacket.
What race are you at now in that series?
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Did you say a Jaguar?
A jacket
and a gold ring. Sorry.
No. I give it to all our champions. My wife has a ring made with the Soto Speedway of the Year championship. We give them a jacket, and we give them a beautiful first-place trophy.
And a $10,000 check.
Schofield's gotten it twice, I believe. Jordy's got it. Pletcher had it. Who was the other one? Oh, Choquette. Yeah, Jeff Choquette.
So what race are you in your series right now?
I can't give you that because I don't know off the top of my head. I couldn't tell you which one it is. I think it's about the 8th or 9th.
And your guys have to run every race in order to...
You have to run every race, collect the points to get to the end, and...
Beautiful.
We got about 18 members right now.
So that's good. I mean, it's better than, some tracks, they don't do that. They say that they pay all the money up front, but it seems like they pay the same amount of money that you're paying, and you've got a point series, so that's... That's not a bad deal you got going on there.
Well, I'm surprised you never knew about it or heard about it. Or
you got to remember, I just got back into racing after being off for 6 years.
Quite a while.
Yeah, probably 6 years. And getting back into racing, what's really getting me is to seeing like this Timmy Russell and, knowing his son. I'm asking about, what happened to David Russell? Yeah, you talking about his dad? I'm having to deal with that now with getting older. And you see that too, having the track all this time. You've been around racing now for... Not just owning the track, but around racing here in Florida for 10, 11 years.
12 years, 13
12 years,
years
somewhere
yeah.
around there, because you were around seeing how series worked and didn't work properly
along
the way. So you did get to learn things that
I learned
maybe
a
some
lot.
People, a lot of these fans and even some of the racers at your racetrack really don't understand the knowledge that you have for racing and where you came from.
Well, like I said, it's... To own a racetrack and be around this stuff, you got to eat, drink, and sleep it. And, like I said, I've been to every racetrack in Florida. I work with the Florida Pros for, I think, 4 or 5 years. Been around with them. They've groomed me. Don DeRone has groomed me. Bert Ashelman. Anytime, I needed a question, I had a question or something, they've, always jumped on and helped me out. And, they were really great guys and what I learned behind the scenes, the do's and don'ts, it might say that I'm trying to concentrate and Jack is talking.
That happens around here. Hand signals, throwing stuff at each other.
We get on a good subject and they argue about the subject.
I see this. So I'm like,
just look at me and talk and we're good.
I'm hearing everything going on over here.
Me and Jason have learned.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about over here.
That's a good deal he's got going on with late models. One of the things that a lot of people... I want to get back to the whole internet message board nastiness thing. Because it does get that way.
I am your father.
What was the whole ordeal a while back here? I think it was probably a little less than a month ago or maybe a month ago. You had to shut down the message board at your website.
Well, you know what happens? Because we have kids that go on there and stuff, and people say things, and, it's not good to have... We're trying to bring these kids up right, and the stuff that the people are saying, they won't say it to anybody's face, but they'll get on that message board and let it go and rip, 100%. And I just wasn't going to put up with it, so I shut it down. I says, that's enough, until you learn, and then I'll turn it back on.
It was funny. I actually became a member of that message site a day before you shut it down. And I guess the main thing that was going on, why it got shut down, was a bunch of arguments that were happening with the bomber drivers. What happened with the bomber class? Because I know there for a while you lost some cars, and I'm not going to hide it. Yes, some of them came south. But what happened with the bomber drivers? Well, I know it's getting built back up again.
Well, what happened was, as any track, you got to run tech in between the buoys, and you got to have your car legal. And this has been, if you don't help these guys get your stuff legal, they can't understand why they can't have this camera, they can't have that, so they spin everything around, and they just don't understand that, I'm for the drivers, I'm for the fans, I'm for everybody. But you know what? When you walk through my gates, we have a policy, and I try to follow the rules, to a T, if we can. You have a problem with your car, you come to our tech guys and say, hey, listen, I got a problem with these brakes, I got aluminum brake calipers on the car, can you let it go this week? Well, that's fine. But you have to try to keep consistency. And when these guys keep spinning stuff around on us about cams, about springs, about weight and this and that, they think they can come in there and, win the race, be illegal, and they can't understand why. And I just don't get it. We got rules, and if you pull it out, you show them, but it doesn't mean that. They just think it means something else.
Do you think too many track owners in the state of Florida are probably listening too much to what the drivers say and dictating what comes up with the rules? Do you think the track owners and the people in charge, the officials, are really letting them run away with that? Because my feeling is the track owners and officials need to make the rules, not the drivers.
You're 100% right, and I can give you an example of that. And I can tell you what I fell into, and I was kind of – I should have never did what I did, but I did it. We had the Race of Champions, the Modified, paid $3,000 to win, $125 lap race every November. And we had a situation with a set of heads. I'm not going to mention the guy that built the motor, da-da-da, this and that. But what happened was the heads were wrong. And he made us, after we DQ'd the guy, we had the meeting for the following year, which I haven't changed the rules for 4 or 5 years, had us kind of convinced that, well, we need to do this. Well, why do I want to make these guys work on their heads, flow them and port them, and cost these guys another $3,000? But that's exactly what happened. Because he had this, he can't understand that these heads were never touched or whatever, and I just didn't fall off the apple tree yesterday.
If the rules would stay like that, and guys would just race those cars like they are, then the four-cylinder bombers would stay four-cylinder bombers, the street stocks would stay street stocks, and if you want to go up, because it's always the fastest guy in the class,
he wants
to make his car go faster, okay?
Move
and
up.
He thinks that, oh, if I put $300 more in my car, I'll go 2/10 faster. So he tries to convince the track owner to do that when instead he needs to sell his car
and
to
move
somebody
up.
And
well,
move
you know,
up.
Guys like Howie Commander have done that. One of the things that we see all the time, somebody asked me about doing a reunion like about Hialeah, like just happened for Sunshine Speedway. We had 1,800 people. The number's been revised from the owners of the restaurant at the Quaker Steak and Lube, but there was 1,800 people turned out for this party. Okay, you were there, John. That was a big deal. There was a lot of people there.
Great promotional event for you.
People ask us about doing the same thing for Hialeah. Hang on a minute. And the bottom line is I said no, and they asked me why. I said because it wouldn't be the same kind of deal. One of the things that made Sunshine Speedway so successful, and believe me, you know, Bonnie Frank, you know, I mean Bonnie Hill, I didn't agree with a lot of the stuff the way she went about running her track, but it's her business. All of us can disagree with the way things are. People tell me all the time how to run Karnak, but I mean, I listen to some and I don't listen to some. But the point is that Bonnie Hill and Frank Hill and the family ran that track after her dad built it and so forth. They had a consistent, long-term, same management. What happens, and so the track was very successful. You go to Howie Commander up north, this guy's been running this track forever, and you have the same consistent management. John is running his track. His track, your track is so much more oiled now than it was, say, the year two, because you've been doing it. And what happens is every time a track changes ownership, guys go, oh, great, we got a new ownership. Well, it isn't always so good, because you even mentioned, John, about the honeymoon, because, you know, some of the guys got honeymoon periods. Well, one of the problems that we have in Florida racing, which we really can't get around, it's the way it is – you don't have a lot of tracks that have had a long-term, consistent ownership and management.
Well, here's another problem about Florida racing, and it's not that it's a real problem, but like these tracks up north, they run 22 weeks. We run 40 weeks, 43 weeks, and we have to keep the doors open to survive. It's not a hobby for me. I'm supporting a lot of people out of that racetrack, and I have to be there. And be able, I just can't close down for 6 months.
It's a circus every week.
I cannot do it. I would not be able to afford the taxes and everything else. I pay sales tax alone. I pay $140,000 a year just in sales tax. That money's gone. They're my partner. I mean, what are you going to do?
John, what's it cost on a race night to turn on the lights?
$500.
Wow.
That's right. That's a race night or a practice night. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. That's what we figured out. It costs us to do that. And, obviously, you got insurance. You got rain. You got radio. You got newspaper. There's so many factors that on a Saturday. I got over 70 employees there. I own everything there, and that's the only way I would do it. I mean, you need to take all that pie, put it together at the end of the year, and you know that's your general fund or whatever.
Now it was a little different. Like what happened on your message board? You had to close it down a little bit earlier this year. Things got out of hand. You brought it back. Those were some of the, I mean, this might be a little bit different. I don't think so. I told Mike this, Mike Peters this, and I've told anybody that wants, I mean, my opinion is that the people, and I don't really have any doubt about it, the people that post on, especially the people who are constantly posting negative carping comments or putting out the suggestions and telling track owners and other promoters of traveling series how to run their businesses, most of these people, first of all, these people do not, HTC, I know you're listening, you asked me the question, and I'm going to give you the answer. You do not represent the average race car fan or the average fan who's sitting in John Sapercone's stand on Saturday evening. You are not a typical race fan. The people that post on the Karnak message board are not typical race fans. You're not the average Joe. 3,000 people went out, at least 2,000 of them. There was a ton of kids there. There was probably 2,000 paying adults. Went and paid $30 at Lakeland while you guys all went on the message boards and bitched and moaned and whined about paying $30.
Well, they didn't go to any racetrack.
Right. Well, there was 2,000 people who went. And the point is, you want to know why. This is the deal. I don't constantly belittle you guys for your thoughts. I rarely come on and put responses onto your post because, first of all, in 10 years, I've heard everything that you've had to say. There hasn't been anything innovative that anybody's put on that message board in the last 2 years.
I think he needs the Godfather
music. Okay? So, Mr. HTC, the problem that you guys have, and you guys are you and about a dozen guys, Cindy Lynn, this Eagle Tie guy we had on here who's going to tell us all how it all works. The problem you guys have is you want to come on here and throw crap at people, but when somebody comes on and wants to argue with you, you get your little feelings hurt, okay? So I think what you need to do is I think you need to get off that Karnak message board because, first of all, you don't have, like you say, the last you checked, we live in a free country where we are allowed and encouraged to think and speak without fear of persecution. When you come on the Karnak.com message boards, you only have the rights that I give you. Period.
Well, that's the kind of thing when you come to the
period.
Race,
you when you to go to racetrack. John's racetrack, you can't stand out in front of his track and throw rotten apples at him because he's going to kick your butt out.
Yeah.
Okay. You only if you want to go. If I own a bar and you want to come tell me what a crappy place I have, I'm going to throw your ass out, and the bouncer's going to crush your skull if you try to come back in.
And this is eight stories up.
And this is eight exactly.
And I'm
so,
the bouncer.
The bottom line is, if you want to come on and bitch about things on the message board, you go right ahead. But guess what? You're only talking to yourself, and there's as many people laughing at your silliness as there is taking you seriously. So I hope that answered your question, and now you can go back to your bathroom wall.
What does HTC
have fun.
Mean? Happy typing child.
No, I know what HTC means, and I loved watching his dad race.
That's fine. The message board is what it is. The message board is a place for people to voice their opinion, and that's all it is their opinion. Don't take it personal.
That's what I said. Don't take it to heart. If they had so many people that want to voice their opinion, the phone lines are open. Call us. Bada-bing.
Yeah, they don't do that. They don't do that. And I feel I'll tell anybody out there, say whatever you want about me. I don't care.
I have a question, John. I've heard a lot of rumors about your track being for sale. Do you want to clarify?
Everything I have is for sale. Anything you want to buy, it's for sale for the right amount of money.
How much for
never,
her?
And I would never turn it down.
How much for her?
How much? You don't have the pockets. I can guarantee you that.
I got one, two,
he's
three,
got, he's
four,
got some
five,
pockets.
Six, well, and a place to hold a call
hammer.
Do you know how many people that I get letters and I get emails from real estate companies to this day, and we want to buy your place, fine. If you can write that check, here it is.
Bring the suitcase.
But I haven't seen it yet. So for right now, I love what I do. I haven't
Those
seen the right amount
pockets.
Of money, and no, I'm not selling it.
You know what I'm going to tell you? That's good. He said he's not selling it right now. Just only thing that I have to say, and there again, it's opinion, please sell it to somebody that's going to keep it as a racetrack. I know it's going to be tough to find that person.
That's
but
what we were just saying. You don't want John to sell a track because then you're going to go through the whole learning thing all over.
What will you do on a Saturday night? You need to be down there in turn two, directing, or turn three, directing those cars into the pits. Turn two.
I love what I do. I really do. I love being out there with you guys on that racetrack. I wish I could be out there driving a car again, but, you know, I have to worry about this monster I created.
Next time I come there,
no.
I'll let you sit in the seat and go driving around the track some.
No. I got my own. It's sitting on a rack.
I saw it. It was a little bent up.
Yeah. I had a little problem.
John.
Did you do that?
Oh, yeah.
You still feeling that one?
I would encourage you folks, that if you want to see some good racing, go to DeSoto Super Speedway. Check out John Strike, and you will see him in turn two on the racetrack, and you'll probably see Camille somewhere working at that racetrack somewhere. Because last I went there, they were both working very hard to try to make it a great show, and it was a great show. I had a great time.
You did really well.
Yeah, I mean, and I had. It's been a while, been a long time since I had been at your place, since before it was your place. So it had been a long time, and I had a good time there, and I'm sure other racers that you have every week.
What else is going on in the state race-wise? Well, I know Charlotte County is going to have a super late model race, their second one coming up.
Yep, we got
this
our
weekend.
Super late model race coming up. Rob's going to be down there for it. Also, I spoke with Chris Turner Friday night. He was at the track practicing Anderson's car.
He's got Richie's car.
Yeah, he's got Richie's car, and I guess Richie's up walking around. He was
there.
No, he wasn't there. He's going to try to come up for
I
the
saw
race.
Him.
Friday night?
No.
No,
the
no,
week
no, no.
before.
Yeah, Richie's up been walking around. He's doing a lot better. Still has a long way to go. So Turner's going to be driving his car. Wayne's going to be.
Huh?
Yeah, the big fish. Big fish. Known Chris a long time. Really good guy. Glad to see him back in a race car. And one minute. Hold the finger.
I tried to find
you
out.
You got a live one?
I tried to find out if Randy Fox was going to be there, but I don't think Randy's going to be there this weekend from what I heard.
Fox?
Yeah.
In regards to Joy Gilder, who's going to be on the show tonight, will be on next week. John, she says the reason that it's called DeSoto Super Speedway is it has something to do with the new website after John became owner of the track. He wanted to have his own domain name on the internet for his website. I hope I won the two free tickets.
You're absolutely wrong.
Oh, no, Joy.
But she's got the tickets anyhow.
But you have the tickets anyway.
Too cool.
So there you go.
I have a guess. Can I give a guess? Can I give a guess?
Sure, give a guess.
My guess is that it's a corporation that you have, and so the corporation name had to change.
You got it.
And the reason why I know that is because I have a corporation, and I tried to name it one that I had before, and somebody else has it now.
Exactly.
So I had to vary the name.
You got it.
I got free tickets. Actually, I get a free entry fee the next time.
All right, you got it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Elton going to DeSoto. How about that?
So that's the whole mystery behind the whole deal, and everybody's making fun. Well, it's a super and laughing, and it's a super speedway, and it's this and it's that. You know what? That's the reason.
And I never knew that, folks. He didn't tell me. He wouldn't tell me all night, but I figured it out. Isn't that great?
I'm glad you found. I'm glad you figured it out,
John. A couple little things before we go. How long have you been running DeSoto Super Speedway?
This is my second week.
Come on.
It'll be 8 years in January.
8 years.
Yes.
Who had it before you?
Dwayne Muzak.
And I tell you what, you're doing a good job with it. What do you got coming up at the track here?
Well, next weekend we're going to have a bocce ball tournament. Anybody wants to play bocce
ball?
Highlight
in the infield.
I want to sponsor the bocce ball.
I'm opening up a betting window so we can bet on cars and who's going to win the race.
Tiddlywinks on the front straight.
John, thank you very much for coming by tonight. No, we really appreciate it.
I really enjoyed it. And you guys are welcome anytime, especially Rob Bonehead over here.
Thank you to Dave Rogers and everybody else that was on.
If I'm off on a Saturday night, I'm going to hang out and party with you guys.
Yeah.
You're going to have to be on a racetrack with me, though.
I had a good time tonight. Thanks for coming in, John. Camille, thanks for sleeping the whole time.
Next week, don't want to miss it. We're going to have a lot of fun. Stay tuned in on the message boards. Make sure you listen to Inside Florida Racing. You can join me every Friday night, 7 to 9, on the Tower of Power. I am Racing Jason Becker, joined by the Carol Wicks, Rob Bonehead Elting, Jack Karnak, and the man himself spending the evening with us, Mr. John Zappertone from DeSoto Super Speedway. Y'all have a good night. Remember, keep the race on the racetrack, the speed on the speedway, and we'll see you on Inside Florida Racing.
stop going down to Rozier Park. Don't get caught there after dark. Take a tip from me, old son. Not even if you got a gun. We're gonna do the St. Pete Boogie. Let my brutal lamb shake. Just a rockin' little party. Did my jive in the cave. When you're doing the St. Pete Boogie, don't be contemplating crime. When you're doing the St. Pete Boogie, don't be contemplating crime. 'Cause you'll wind up in the can, man, and you'll end up doing time. Just be doing